guide our institutions and the governing councils and management on what needs to be done. At the beginning of the year, our DDG for university education also shared that we are developing what we call an early warning system, which will enable us to pick up problems beforehand. But I also do need to say this, Chair, up front, that we are seriously we've committed ourselves. We just need to move this a little bit faster, maybe to establish an ombuds system, to have an ombudsperson for the sector. Because clearly, as the department, we can't be dealing with millions of problems that are in the sector, and that we do need, at least we must lay a foundation for the next administration to be able to develop an ombuds system. There's also something else, Chair. I don't know, you might have raised this, but which is observable increasingly, is that the system sometimes is unable to pick up troublemakers, if I can use that word, who hop from one institution to the next. You know, the apartheid regime used to be very good at this, but for its own perverse reasons, that they were looking for activists against apartheid, you know, and so on. In our sector now, I'm concerned, you find very senior people sometimes, a DVC or a dean, moving from one university, going to another, being called to order, sometimes found guilty on something, but reappears in another part of the sector. Hopefully when we develop the ombuds system, it should also have that capacity as a referral point, you know, where we say to institutions, before employing a senior person, have that point to check. I'm very concerned about that, that it's an issue that needs to be addressed. Even students in some instances, you know, who have been found guilty for very serious violations, and they then reappear in another institution as if nothing has happened. Now, I do also want to point out that the other thing that we are looking at, both SAUS, in this case of universities, and USAF, have agreed that we need to agree on rules of engagement in case there are disputes, disagreements, or protests in particular. We do need to have that so that it's not just a free-for-all. If there's disagreement or a protest, we have got destruction of property, you have got underhand means that are used to try and achieve one's purposes. At least in South Africa, we are lucky that we've got a fairly advanced labor relations system, for instance, from which we can learn a lot in terms of dispute resolution and so on. So that's another thing that I just thought I must foreground. I noticed, by the way, as a matter of interest, that we've been so focused on getting the sector right, on access and success. We've had no legislation in this committee this current season. But I do wish to indicate very broadly, without being specific, that we are also now seriously looking at possible future legislative changes to strengthen the system, to make the system run much more better. That would be the task of the 7th administration, obviously. But it's clear to us that there is need for legislative amendments. Also, Chair, I would just like to say to you, a few years ago, we did the DGO. Or Dr. Sotsuba may remember, a very important assessment of the reports of independent assessors. Between 2000 and now, the year 2000, we've had about 16 independent assessors being appointed for the sector. We've studied those reports fairly closely. And some of the things that the DG and the team will be sharing with you is some of the common issues that are emerging in the analysis of those independent assessors' reports. For example, one of the things that's very striking is that we continue to be faced with the challenge of inexperience in a number of instances in the case of council members. Remember, by the way, also that insofar as universities are concerned, I think each council of each university has got about 30 members. I only appoint 5. 25 are appointed through various processes and from various stakeholders. But there is a problem of relative inexperience, although we have instituted mechanisms through what I've pointed out, you know, principles, a framework for good governance, to induct the sector. But we need to intensify induction of council members. Also, what is important is that part of the causes of instability is often fraught relationships between councils and management. That's another thing that we find it's very common across the board as a contributor to governance instability. And poor leadership also at the levels of councils and sometimes at the level of management is also a contributory factor. Usually also unacceptable and counterproductive conduct by some council members and non-adherence to proper meeting procedures. You know, at the moment we are sitting with some university councils that, for instance, Forte, it has been drawn to our attention that for the last 2 or 3 council meetings, they couldn't agree on a council agenda. And therefore, those meetings have not taken place. Usually, also, when you have a council that meets from 9 till 9 in the evening, you know that there are problems there. Ordinarily well-functioning councils. I sat on a number of university councils that were not well-functioning and others functioning before I became a member of parliament. Some councils sit for 2 hours. Very straight agenda, straight to the point, discussions and all that. The other issue, of course, is corruption. I think that one of the things that as a committee and parliament we also have to, as we grapple with it, is that universities have become huge sites for personal and private accumulation. If you look at their budgets, their supply chain, procurement, and so on, increasingly also as corruption has become a problem in our society, our institutions of higher learning have not been left untouched when it comes to that. Now, the other maybe important matter is that we are looking at the structure of our department at the moment as I'm talking to you. The DG might want to signal this. We are loath to call it restructuring because not strictly that. But we are looking at how do we strengthen governance oversight by the department, even possibility of establishing a branch on governance. Bear in mind also the fact that we are the department in government that has got the single largest number of entities. There's no other department that has got as many entities as the Department of Higher Education and Training. Hence the scale of the problems of governance sometimes, and therefore we need to, at the moment we handle governance issues in a fragmented way in the department. TVET would deal with universities, community colleges, the CETAs and so on. We need an overarching strategy of effective governance oversight. That's where also the issue of early warning systems should actually come in and be developed there. But I want to say this, Honorable Chair, because sometimes we emphasize this, but it's not fully appreciated out there. The best solution to solve most of our problems is at institutional level. We are not saying that government at national level doesn't act to try and assist. But sometimes there is a tendency of elevating an institutional problem into a national problem, even when it is not. That is why one of our focus areas is to improve capacity at institutional level to deal with these problems. And that's where they are best dealt with. Politically, of course, it suits some to elevate it and say, where is the department, where is the minister, you know, and so on. Even when that's not necessary, because the problem. That's why we're encouraging management to say, engage your stakeholders, deal with all the issues that they raise. No matter how painful it may seem to deal with that, but focus on dealing. If students have an issue, engage them. But also we urge, whether it's unions and also students, do engage. Do not just strike at the whim, you know. Anyhow, even before discussions, a demand is made and then students are out protesting. We're also urging students to engage before they consider other actions, because a lot of these problems can actually be able to be solved that way. We continue, of course, to expect that we are doing all this because we want our institutions to act within the context of our national mandate and our developmental objectives and priorities. I know the issue of autonomy institutions gets raised. Obviously, we are not interested, nor do we have the capacity as the department to micromanage institutions. But there is no autonomy without responsibility, and there is no autonomy from transformation. That we are very clear. No one will claim autonomy in order to undermine or be indifferent to our transformation agenda. That is why in a number of instances we have to intervene in order to deal with the problems. With that, Chair, and with your permission, I will then hand over to the DG and the team to then take you through the presentation, as I say, maybe within the next 5 to 8 minutes you'll allow me to just slowly walk away to go and introduce my DSI team in the select committee at NCOP, and then I'll be back within an hour or so. Ngiyabonga, Ms. Hlahla. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Over to you, DG.
Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Science and Innovation, our Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, Dr. Blade Nzimande, recognizing our Deputy Minister was not with us here traveling, but represented by his office, all honorable members of the Portfolio Committee present, may I take this opportunity to also recognize the advisors of the Minister that are present here with us, Mr. Nqaba Nqandela, who's with us, Professor Derek Swart. Sorry, Professor Derek Swart with us, and all of a sudden, Minister, I'm reminded that I should be at this stage recognizing the late advisor. Mr. David Nidri, and I think may his soul rest in peace, and maybe take this opportunity to convey on behalf of the department deepest condolences to his family and to the minister as well, who's worked with him over many years within the department and outside of our department. And as a DG of the department, without the advice and direction and critical, you know, engagements and robust interactions that happens within the department from the advisors of the minister, we would not be where we are today. So thank you very much for their continued support. Particularly, Minister, if I take into account that today we are presenting, as requested by the Portfolio Committee, three key reports. One, an investigation report into governance and management challenges at the University of Cape Town, the University of South Africa's report on governance-related matters, which include progress in the implementation of the MTT review of UNISA recommendations, an initiative of our minister. And at times when we, you know, problems are cited in these institutions, and we present such reports, many would not have taken note of the fact that, in fact, the ministerial task team review would have been the initiative of the minister. And that is why we would like to recognize that, Honorable Minister. The update of the suspension of Vaal University of Technology Vice-Chancellor, amongst other areas. But I think in our presentation, Chair, we will also try to provide a much more holistic picture regarding this. May I just reflect briefly on the Minister's comments as foregrounding our presentation. And the Minister makes the point that on average, councils will have about 30 members, and the minister is only responsible for five of those 30. And I think this really it's telling in terms of the work that we need to do to try and assist councils to improve their performance, which I think is fundamental to our attempt to improve governance. The update, Chairperson, on the affairs of the University of Fort Hare and the University of KwaZulu-Natal is included in our presentation. The Minister also further makes a point that about tender prenization of the PSET institutions. I think this is an understated point. If you take into account these reports have been circulated. But the point, Minister, here we are making is that our institutions have now become sites for struggles of accumulation. And the Minister has made this point very clear. But I think what is going to challenge us is what it is that we have to do to deal with this. And I think in a way, and in my own mind, I think it's important to work with with society, with our stakeholders, because sites or our institutions are a microcosm of society. So what happens in society spills over to our institution. And the permanent solution to educational problems is also to understand how they are embedded in social struggles. And I think this is really important for us. The Minister further makes a point about what could be gaps in our response to the issues that we have raised, and besides the need for establishing a governance focused area within the administration. And may I indicate that there is an opportunity for us, not only Minister, to introduce this in the sixth administration, but to immediately respond to it, because we are not yet finalized with the review of the organizational structure of our department. Even though we have received the report, which is final, but we still can actually engage our stakeholders and establish the desirability and feasibility of that aspect of work. Of course, it takes some time, but we can immediately take this into account. Thank you. Can I request Anel? I want to switch the computers and use this one. It's refusing to respond. Central to the issues of governance is obviously going to be the current legislation. Our universities are autonomous institutions, which means that the councils are responsible for developing statutes and rules to govern the affairs of our universities. I think it's important that we make this clear, and I think at the time that in my opening remarks I cited that of the 30 members of council, the minister only appoints 5. And I think this is crucial. Literature will argue that the autonomy should ensure that there is stability and the actualization of the goals and aspirations of a university. That autonomy insulates the institution from external interference. That autonomy also insulates the institution from external control in its day-to-day operations. It empowers universities in the competitive environment, and it allows for innovation in responding to challenges and the national policy goals. Autonomy of our institutions enables these institutions to assume responsibility for their success and failure. This legislation, therefore, places a huge stake in terms of accountability in the hands of our councils and management of our institutions. And I think when in the final analysis of our progress or challenges in the governance of our institutions, these are matters that need to be taken into account. But the other side of the coin is that the institutional autonomy may be used as a pretext for resisting transformation. It may also be used to hide the lack of accountability, or in some cases defend mismanagement in our institutions. Abuse of power and authority by institutional leadership could be very difficult to tackle when you have to navigate through the autonomous status of our institutions. And the institutions may also suppress ideas and engagement, which stifles the growth of democracy within our institutions. And at some point, I think we want to make a point that institutional forums in most universities are not fully utilized by the leadership of our institutions. And that is an example that there is a further need to entrench a democratic culture in the governance of our institutions through existing structures that are not optimally utilized. And this is a point that we make. And in the interest of government, or it, We therefore wish to indicate that we recognize the autonomy for our institutions, and we have no appetite as a department or the ministry to micromanage our institutions in higher education. There is a responsibility to ensure accountability for the use of public resources by our institutions, having regard to the reputation and integrity of higher education system. If you look at the White Paper 3, it outlines the principle of public accountability, which implies that institutions are answerable for their actions and decisions, not only to their governing bodies and councils, but they are also answerable to a broader society. And most of them will highlight their accountability to their institutional communities as if that is the end. Society as a whole is interested in how our institutions are governed. At some point, Chair, we are going to indicate in terms of the UNISA report that 51% of all teachers are produced through these institutions, the University of South Africa. Therefore, fixing the governance issues in that institution is not just about the institution itself, but it is about education as a whole, including basic education. And so when we engage on the reports that we are tabling to the portfolio committee, matters need to be looked into in the light of the consequences for the decisions that we take. No, whether the decision is X or Y, there are consequences for doing so. And it is important for us to argue right at the beginning of our presentation that this is not a technical process where there is one way or the other. It is the interest of the institution that is important and paramount, and that is what must guide the final decisions that are taken on the basis of the reports that are themselves not pure and perfect, that are themselves are full of, in the words of the compilers of such report, they are full of impurities, and they are acknowledged in the very same report. So it's important that we do so, because we've gazetted these reports and they are now out there for public consumption. And it's important that we also guide society as they engage with the facts that are tabled, that in reading these reports, we must take into account that the thousands of students, some of them who only have one opportunity to study, and if you disrupt that opportunity, they will never regain the chance for education, particularly the poor and the working class. The institutions report on annual basis to demonstrate the results they have achieved with the resources that they have at disposal. And they demonstrate how they have met national policies, and they have also to report on their governance arrangements as per the reporting regulations. The governance of higher education institutions also include the scrutiny over governing councils and the executive to ensure proper governance of institutions and the need for them to be more vigorous, and that these councils those who hold the office should be motivated by the desire to contribute to the public good. What we do in this light, members, is just to provide a profile. May I indicate that we've also afforded members with a comprehensive a profile of members of councils, just to give the portfolio committee more than just the breakdown in terms of numerically. But in the spreadsheet that we've provided members with, you see the names of the people that are actually appointed. We thought this would assist, so that when we talk about councils, it's not vague. It is clear who have we appointed, We've also tried to indicate the gender, you know, and race, you know, including their constituency, you know, and we hope that in view of this data that we are placing before our portfolio committee, there will emerge a sense of the attempt by the department to improve governance. And you will see this in the light of qualifications. For example, we provide this to the portfolio committee. What are the qualifications of council members? And this is the level of detail that our presentation has gone to try and say to our portfolio committee, we have you know, followed the letter and spirit of the law regarding the appointment of councillors, notwithstanding the limitations that are imposed on us by the fact that at the end of the day, the responsibility also is placed on various constituencies that are responsible. In this regard, therefore, Chair, I'm not going to go through each university. I will just make reference to it in this slide, but may I indicate that on average, you can see that most councils are stable and they are fully, you know, the vacancies that are there, most of them are in the process of being filled, but almost all councils are fully functional. And we provide the details in this regard in most of the council, and we try to indicate what is the state of governance in the next slide. For example, we start with CPUT, and we argue that generally CPUT is a stable institution. Its council was reconstituted in 2022, and the amended statute was approved by the minister in 2022. And there are known governance problems or concerns about maladministration that, you know, are being managed. And they don't take away from the fact that overall this institution is stable. CUT, we also provide a sense of governance there, the status. The minister has appointed Professor Duncan as the independent assessor in October to conduct an investigation in the affairs of the university, which followed the suspension of the vice chancellor in 2020. And the council is handling the matter and the number of allegations that came to the attention of the minister. The report was submitted to the minister and shared with council, and the process is underway of dealing with the issues that are there. DUT is a stable institution, and in fact it's one of our most stable institutions at DUT, notwithstanding that there are a number of allegations that came to the attention of the minister regarding issues of governance, but nothing takes away from the stability that is there. We are concerned about the MUT, and I think with the MUT, I think the issue there, Chair, is the fact that since its establishment, there hasn't been a stability in that particular institution. And if in our analysis of all the report of independent assessors and administrators that have been appointed in that institution, it is clear to us that central to solution of the problems of the MUT has got to be the turnaround in terms of institutional culture. Now, turning around in institutional culture it is more than just legislating and a couple of frameworks developed. It is about working with the entire communities and set of stakeholders in ensuring that institutions is there. And a key to the recommendations of most of those assessors and administrators, Chair, is that we need to establish multidisciplinary teams to work with the MUT. And the minister is in the process of putting this together. and very soon these will be announced as an attempt to comprehensively change the culture in that institution. And there's currently the work by Professor Van Staden, who's been appointed as an administrator, who's looking into also those issues. And we trust that his report will further inform us about what it is that can still be done to embed the culture of democracy in the institution, but an institutional culture that is can be identified in well-established higher or institutions of higher learning. NMU, NWU, Rhodes University, Sefako Magato University, SPU, TUT, UCT, generally these are institutions that are stable. Chair, I don't think that the issues that are reported, and I would like to make one comment about UNISA, can take away from the fact that these are institutions that are stable. At some point, though, Chair, we have to make the point that institutional leaders in all of these institutions, notwithstanding the argument that they are stable, must take responsibility of ensuring that institutional issues are managed at the level of the institutions and not allowed to escalate to a point where it creates an impression that, the governance of all our institutions are problematic. For example, this thing of being trigger happy when there are protests in institutions, at slightest provocation, there are security forces that are called upon to quell, protests. It's not what you expect from institutions that are, supposed to be, driven by intellectual, engagement. The department, in terms of UCT, remains concerned with the developments on the ongoing investigation of the panel. And as a department chair, we can't wait for the finalization of the report of the panel for us to be able to identify the levers that we could utilize to improve and enhance stability in an institution that has the potential make South Africa proud. And I think it is important that we do not, in this regard, overemphasize issues before the report is tabled. The minister has spoken quite in details about Fort Hare University, and I think you will recall, Chair, that early in the year, issues around the security of primarily staff after the unfortunate incidents that led to death of one lecturer and bodyguards, it becomes clear to us that Chair, there's work to be done. The university is in a post-administration state. The department continues to closely monitor the affairs of the university, and we remain concerned about the safety of not just the executives, but of our students. A lot of interventions. At some point when these issues were raised, we visited Fort Hare, and we asked and we made reference to the public, to the student village that we have developed at Fort Hare. You know, evidence of interventions that we have instituted at that institution. But working with the police and state security agents, we also have understood that there is a need for alignment between our processes and how security structures are structured. For example, Chair, in a small village that has one police station, most or the decision to set up such a police station would be on the basis of the numbers in that community. But this does not take into account the numbers in terms of the institutions of hiring the PSET institutions. If you look at Fort Hare, and you look at the fact that an average of about 11,000 students in one campus, it makes it impossible for one police station to actually do this. We are working with the police. A national task force has been agreed upon, and we are working towards constituting a national task force to deal with this. And I think this does not apply to Fort Hare only; it applies to all our institutions. Free State University, there are problems, and there are concerns, and there are issues reported on maladministration. But overall, we will argue that the institution is stable. The University of Johannesburg is stable. Of course, there are issues that concern us that we are working with the institutions. The governance at UKZN worries us, particularly my earlier comment about how the university deal with their protests. I think it's something which the minister is worried about. But we are engaging council through the proper channels to say how do we build better platforms for engagement between management and students, so that our SRCs are engaged and it's not like it's slightest provocation then there is unleashing of the full might of the forces. But having said that, Chair, we have observed that most of our higher education institutions in KwaZulu-Natal, there is a higher level of violence that characterizes protests. Violent protests have become quite disturbing in the institutions of higher learning in KwaZulu-Natal. A small protest, out of it emerges incidents of arson, incidents of violence and injury, to students and staff. And when you look at the issues, it can't be that you must have that level of I think in this regard, the minister is working with the provincial government in KwaZulu-Natal to also see the extent to which we could utilize existing processes within the province to strengthen law enforcement, but on the other hand, as a department, to making sure that the culture of good governance is characterizes the management of the institutions. University of Limpopo governance is stable, and the university is in the process of appointing a new vice chancellor, and progress is good in this regard. We expect that this institution will continue to work towards this trajectory that we see of always trying to improve on its governance. We are very encouraged by the manner in which, in as much as we have reported that we are unhappy about how protests are managed, but in this particular institution, there's been a cooperation, between ourselves and them in the manner in which these have been managed. We think that there will be some improvement. University of Mpumalanga, we are very proud of this institution that is produced by our democracy. The two new institutions built by this democracy, University of Mpumalanga and Sol Plaatje University, they continue to demonstrate stability in their governance, and it's showing as well in the University of Mpumalanga that is you know, is continuing to show strengthened outputs in terms of research and teaching practices. Its embeddedness to community life, you know, also is encouraging us. The University of Pretoria, notwithstanding the recent, developments in the institution that concern us, and we are paying attention to this because in the opening remarks of the minister is worried about officials executives moving from one institution to the other, not finishing their terms, but if you track backwards to see how they left other institutions, you find there is a reason to be concerned. We are paying attention to this, and we are looking into council to provide proper leadership, but we have an interest in ensuring that no disruption of the stability of governance happens at the UP. Chair, I recognize that I've got 15 minutes more. I think the reason I'm pausing on this is because really when it comes to UNISA, you know, I think if you look at our interventions in UNISA, look at the Ministerial Task Team report, look at the extent to which not only have we been guided by the reports of the Ministerial Task Team, but we've gone beyond what the letter of the law says we must do to actually go to UNISA and say, let's sit with the council. Let's hear what is the matter. At UNISA, this is how far we have gone to try and get to the bottom of the issues that are there. The reports are now provided to the members of the Portfolio Committee for your scrutiny. Further to the MTT report, we provide the IA report, and the independent assessors' reports speak on the issues as well. But we would like that when you read these reports, you cross-reference each one of these reports with another, because it's not just one report that is a solution, a panacea to the problems of the institutions, but you have other reports and other interventions in that institution. And if you look back at the MTT report basically demonstrated the concern of the minister about whether or not the institution was drifting away from its mission. And that was the main thing. 150 years, one of the oldest open distance, learning institutions in the world, UNISA is, and it's supposed to be an epitome of excellence in areas. For example, if you look at teacher development, because this is one institution that is responsible for more than 51% of educators in the country. So it's one institution that just cannot fail. It's important, just like all other institutions, but we make this point more when it comes to UNISA. So we present the recommendations, Chair, without trying to interpret these recommendations on behalf of the independent assessor and the experts appointed by the minister in terms of the MTT reports. We present this to the honourable members, and will be guided by your own interpretation as well. These are gazetted, which means the broader public is put into our confidence, and I hope that there is an appreciation of this, you know, from the members of the public, that we are bringing the entire society, into being part of the solutions of important institutions like this. And we trust that inputs that we are going to galvanize from, those reports will provide us with, the guidance that will lead to a solution that is going to be embraced by all South Africans. What I can just say is that our minister takes this thing very seriously. As you can see, he's not relying on just one report. In his assessment of inputs already made, the minister feels that the interest of education and the interest of UNISA as a whole must be paramount. And I think that is what you will see in the final decision that will be taken. The department is also concerned with Stellenbosch University, particularly the recent chair calls for the VC to step down. We feel that these calls are not necessarily emanating from the governance system within that institution, but it feels that there are forces that are interested in actually entrenching racism, who are unhappy about the direction, notwithstanding the fact that we are unhappy about the slow pace of transformation in the institution. But the fact is that the reasons behind calling for VC to step down needs to be looked into carefully. And we are not rushing into it, but we are paying our attention to this issue so that we understand the nuances, that informs these calls. It is something that is worrying, but we are working on it. The University of Venda is a stable institution. Of course, there are concerns over the safety of members of senior and executive management following threats and attempted assassination. And this is also related to the minister's opening remarks around the tenderization of our institution, where mafias just think that they have a right to just move into institution and demand a portion of tenders in the institution. And I think this cannot be understated. And I think the institution needs support, and the support that we give cannot be enough. We have to continuously work with UNIVEN, and I'm happy with what the branch university is doing in this regard. University of Zululand continues to be stable, and it's on its way to recovery after many years of weak governance. The institution is strengthening, and it continues to move in the direction that we want to see. The University of Western Cape has recently had interesting engagements with the Vice Chancellor Chair. You'll be interested in this one. I asked the Vice Chancellor, how many times do you meet the FRCs in the institution? And he says, at least once a week. At least once a week. That is what if this is to be taken into account, you can actually see that there are some of our universities that are really doing their best to keep themselves engaged with the student representatives. But unfortunately, I can't say that with all the institutions that are there. But I wish to make this example because I was impressed by that area of governance at UWC. Wits University, Professor Vilakazi, is the vice chancellor there, chair. It needs to be assisted it needs to be assisted. I think sometimes you will not have the skills to do everything. When the protest emerges in institutions, we see the caliber of leadership in those institutions. And I think our DDG and the teams are working hard to engage the institution to say, we can do better in this regard. Otherwise, this is a stable institution of higher learning that continues to produce research outputs that are second to none, and it cannot be ignored that the quality is emerging in most of our institutions, notwithstanding the problems. The VUT, the Post Administration Council took over the governance of this institution and concluded the process of appointment of the new Vice Chancellor, who has started in February 2022. Chair, I think Honourable Mananis, I think when I make this point, I'm making this point of the progress in terms of the appointment of the Vice Chancellor, but also, as you know, the unfortunate incidents that he has sadly passed on the 30th of April, at a time when he was still under a lot of focus in terms of investigations that are taking place in that institution. Professor Dan Ekwadi, and we may so rest in peace. Of course, the transitional mechanism, Professor Mkwena, Dr. Mkwena, who's the university registrar, currently acting VC, and the department continues to monitor this institution. I'm encouraged by the level of engagement between, council management and our branch university in this regard. We visited the institution a number of times. We think that there are difficulties in this institution, but we are working together with them to finding solutions. Walter Sisulu University, stable. Notwithstanding this synopsis, which is really, really, lifted to just give the members of the portfolio committee a sense of the state of governance of our institution, it is important that we make the following observations, Chair. First, that governance of universities overall remain a challenge. So in as much as we have argued that generally our universities, Chair, are stable, but we must also in the same vein acknowledge that there are challenges in this regard. And the Minister makes a point that perhaps we have underestimated the fact that our institutions are not just in intellectual hubs, but they are also business centers to others. And they've developed interest in this. And over time, it has become very clear that these institutions are not capable of dealing with all sorts of interventions and interferences that emerge out of society. And if you look at security, the minister in the last 2 years commissioned a report on the security of the PSET system, and we presented this to the portfolio committee a couple of months ago, and we shared with the portfolio committee the what experts are saying needs to be done to deal with the issues of security. Our branch has also been very active convening workshops with the institutional leadership management in dealing with these matters, and I think notwithstanding this, we have to say, despite the extant governance frameworks that exist, the challenges are still persisting. Chair, at some point I would argue that our constitution provides for free basic education, but then says that
further education shall be made available through as the state develops the capacity to do so, which therefore means the promise of quality education that we make in basic education. When it comes to further education, in our constitution, we still rely on the capacity, which therefore means the resources that are made, that are placed at the disposal of the department, needs to be looked into quite carefully, so that we understand if our responsiveness to issues of expansion, as you know, when we speak of our strategic outcomes, we speak of access to PSET opportunities. We speak of success and efficiency of our institutions. We speak of quality provisioning. We speak of responsiveness of our institutions and improved social and economic development of the PSET system, as you have seen in the white paper. This is the vision. This is our strategic outcomes. But for us to achieve these outcomes, on the other hand, is a need for us to look into the resources that are placed at the disposal of, this department. This is why the ministerial task team on the comprehensive funding model the PSET system is crucial. We are at a given point. We'll make a point about this. The second issue, which summarizes the work that we've presented today, Chair, is the fact that since 2000, and the Minister in his opening remarks makes this point, since 2000, there are 16 independent assessors that have been engaged upon, and they have been appointed for a number of institutions in terms of the Act. As a result of poor institutional governance and mismanagement, with certain institutions, for example, MUT and CUT, being the subject of more than one assessment. Now, I thought that in this presentation, we would have done an injustice if we did not mention this, because I think it's important to alert the Portfolio Committee that these reports have now become an instrument of the department to further develop a clear program of action that is going to engage into comprehensive, interventions to turn around, institutional culture, to turn around governance of our institutions. And these have become a potent weapon, for the department to fix the issues. And I think we would like at some point to come back to the Portfolio Committee to share with you what it is we are going to be doing in this regard. We've already started an analysis in this regard, and in the analysis that we've already made, for example, when it comes to MUT, we have identified the issue of multidisciplinary teams, which is something that is different from any other interventions that we have ever in the history of education in South Africa implemented. And I think we are also trying to figure out the best way of constituting this and how this would work, what kind of people will and what kind of skills are necessary, because there we are not just tackling day-to-day running of the institution, we are tackling the institutional culture so that we turn around MUT and CUT permanently. So the work that has been conducted by independent assessors have uncovered serious challenges with regards to governance and administration, and we hope to capitalize, on this. And I think you can see in our presentations that we are benefiting from these reports, but we have to do a thorough analysis of such reports. Chair, this slide, I'm not going to go through it in details, but the department's response to some of these challenges include the development of guidelines for good governance practices, just for your reference, Chair, because I think it's important to also answer the question, right, you've identified the challenges, what have you done about this? I think it's important, on the other hand, in our presentation, to also show the side of what it is that we have done. I think these guidelines that we've developed for good governance practices, and particularly the governance indicators for councils, we need to probably utilize this tool much better and in a much more innovative way than we have done. You know, currently, if you read those guidelines, they really, really are well crafted, and I believe that they set out clear principles and key elements of good governance practices that will serve as a practical resource to university councils, for all our universities, particularly in their governance role, as well as their indicators for they are indicators for self-assessment by university councils to measure their practices in primary areas of governance. And I think that we are looking at this. I understand that guidelines, by their nature, do not give you the necessary power to entrench and in them in the system, but that's where you start. You don't start by regulating. You start with providing clear guidance, particularly institutions that by nature should themselves be able to deal with these matters. The department is currently working on a project which is aimed at supporting and strengthening institutional governance at these institutions, visits to institutions. The first phase of the project that I've referred to comprises of research on higher education governance. There is also a needs analysis survey, the surveys that we have conducted, including review of available literature regarding good governance. We are learning from other institutions that are doing well in these areas, and through exchange programs and other interventions that are currently in place, we are drawing from lessons learned in that regard. The first phase of this project has commenced. Ultimately, the outcomes of the NISA analysis report will inform the interventions that must support and strengthen institutional governance at universities. The review of Higher Education Act, the minister has made it clear that this is now currently seen as the major interventions. The development of resources on university governance, the development of materials that may be used or adapted by facilitators, trainers, it's some of the resources that are there. Chairperson, I'm going to call upon the DDG to just quickly look into each institution in a nutshell and give us a sense of the status of the level of challenges in terms as reported in the reports that are there. This is not an attempt to interpret the reports on behalf of the committee, but I think it's important that the committee also see how the department is processing these in one way or the other. Thank you very much, Dr. Sopel.
Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, DG. Good morning to the advisors. Good morning to my colleagues who are here in support. Thank you very much for this opportunity. As DG has indicated, I will move into the specifics on the institutions, and I will call them red-flagged institutions, starting with the University of Cape Town. As you know, Chair and members, the problems at UCT emerged following the departure of the Deputy Vice-Chancellor Teaching and Learning, named Professor Liz Langer, in April 2022. The crisis then evolved after a number of questions from the University Senate about the reasons for the departure of the DVC. The response of the Chair of Council to Senate triggered more questions in Senate, and accusations then followed that she and the VC may not have been entirely truthful about the exit of Professor Liz Langer. The Senate engagement spilled over into the media, and you will recall multiple leaks unprecedented of an institution of this caliber, and resignations of some of the members of council followed, including some members of the executive. The correspondence of the minister received on these matters suggested that there are deeper problems at the institutions. We received multiple letters, all entering the fracas from different angles. The minister wrote to the chairperson of council on 11 October requesting a report on how it was addressing the matters in the public domain. And of course, following a council meeting on 15 October, the council undertook to establish a panel of five independent members to investigate the circumstances of these issues, and you will know that that panel has still not concluded its work. We hope that by July, at least that is the informal communication, we will see some report emerging from the institution. The letter of November 2022 from the Acting Chairperson of Council indicates the panel is being approached and appointed to commence with this work. Some stakeholders expressed their reservations about the panel, and we know some of those stakeholders included some members of council, and felt that an independent assessor would be more appropriate. The appointment of an independent assessor by the minister may be the relief that many were seeking at the time. However, we felt it may have been perhaps premature to intervene because the work of the independent panel had not been concluded. When we looked at the terms of reference of the panel, we established that there are five independent members who are tasked with investigating, amongst others, the following matters: whether the VC and the chairperson of council must lead faculty boards, senate or council regarding the reasons for the former DBC teaching and learning and non-availability to serve for a second term, and all matters related to executive relationships, including the number of and reasons for resignations of staff within and outside the executive. The panel was required to make recommendations that could help council and university to prevent and better address any of the failures of governance the panel finds. But of course, with time, those terms of reference have changed, but I will speak to it as I progress. We then learned that on 21 February 2023, council adopted a resolution accepting and approving the memorandum of agreement between the university and the former Professor Parkin, and agreed to review the terms of reference of the investigative panel in order to determine an appropriate form for the panel that would enable it to consider and investigate issues of governance that have affected and are affecting the university without specifically investigating the conduct of the former VC. I want to put a footnote here. There is an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, which also ties us. And I must state up front, because of that non-disclosure agreement, signed by the relevant stakeholders, we are further tied. And I'm just putting it there. But we will await the report from the panel nevertheless. Thereafter, the news of the early retirement of Professor Parkin as a UCT at UCT broke out, and Professor Sue Harrison was appointed as an interim VC. Immediately thereafter, I think a month or so after, Professor Dyer Reddy was appointed as the acting VC following a resolution at its special council meeting on 6 March 2023. Professor Reddy officially assumed duty from Tuesday, 14 March 2023, and he's to hold this position until the new VC is appointed. Following the departure of the former VC, the Council approved at a meeting on 11 March 2023 the amended terms of reference, which I mentioned earlier, and they are self-explanatory. I won't go to it, except I think one must point to the fact that the panel shall not conduct its inquiry in an adversarial fashion, but shall adopt an inquisitorial approach with assistance of an evidence leader. Whatever that means, we hope to establish in the report. We were also advised that the purpose of the inquiry shall be primarily forward-looking. Based on its findings, and the panel is authorized to recommend redress where warranted. The panel is authorized to make recommendations that could help Council and University to prevent and better address any of the failures of governance the panel finds. We can only say at this stage we are truly looking forward to that report. We advise that the panel shall not make any specific findings touching on the personal responsibility of the former VC. Again, this is tied to the NDA, which ultimately, and I'll just summarize here, led to the formation of an exit package for the VC, allowance for the panel to conclude its work. Progress thus far, the panel is to complete its work by 14 July 2023, but it may get an extension if it hasn't done so. This is what we advised by the registrar in writing. And the panel submitted an interim report on 17 May 2023 to the UCT Council. We haven't seen that report, which recommended the removal of the chairperson of council. The chairperson of council, Ms. Ngonyama, filed an urgent review application at the Western Cape High Court to set aside the work of the panel and any attempts by the council to have her removed as chairperson, but on 22 May 23, she announced her resignation. We subsequently learned that Ms. Paladin Gwangwa, who was the deputy chairperson of council at the time, also made an application to interdict the special council meeting. And while we were informed at the time that motions of withdrawal were in place, very recently, I think as early as Monday, we understand that court papers are filed and we are respondents in that document. So way forward, the only approach at least open to us at this point is what is provided in law, and the department will follow the letter. We will wait the conclusion of the inquiry and the report to be submitted to Minister. Once Minister receives that report, we will sit with the legal team and advisors within the department and consider actions to be taken, always guided by the prescripts of the Act. Turning to UNISA, Chair, I think this has been elaborated upon by both VC and Minister this morning. I will not belabor in great length, and I'll quickly move to, with your guidance, of course, move to the actions taken by the Minister after the entity report. So that is, the Minister met with Council 28 June, as indicated by DG, to discuss the entity report and the way forward. Ultimately, in light of the response of the Council and the misgivings that were raised about the limitations of the report, as well as the continuing allegations and reports of mismanagement received by the Minister, and I must say this was from multiple stakeholders, the Department felt that an independent assessor was deemed to be the rational approach. By notice in the Government Gazette of September 2022, the Minister announced the appointment of Professor Themba Musia as the independent assessor to conduct an investigation into the affairs of UNISA. The overall purpose of the investigation was to advise Minister on the source and nature of problems and measures required to restore good governance and management. I shall not speak to the scope. I think you are fully aware of it because this has been tabled in the also before in the Gazette and before Parliament. The way forward, and this is the up-to-date, we received a response as in the department from UNISA on 12 June in the form of a package in a huge box, almost two shoe boxes sizes, with files which our team, that is our legal team, ministerial advisory team, will digest and then advise on a response. And I must again emphasize, again within the prescripts of the law, taking into account the best interests of UNISA as a public higher education institution. Then moving to UFH, that's University of Fort Hare and UKZN, DJ has already spoken to this. Mine is just to summarize as quickly as I can. We've been engaging University of Fort Hare quite extensively, almost every 2 months. Minister is planning to visit University of Fort Hare on 23 June to engage them on how they've progressed, particularly council. I must say at this point, so we effectively are sitting with UCT without a chairperson, University of Fort Hare without a chairperson, and we do really hope these institutions will pay attention to the governance implications of that and appoint the heads of these institutions with the requisite vigor. But thus far, we can confirm that we've engaged Fort Hare on financial sustainability, governance enhancement, infrastructure and maintenance, review of the academic enterprise, all the matters that were raised by the former assessor in the report. Having said that UCT does not have a chairperson, I just need to point out that they have indicated that with the exit of the Bishop Abrams, who indicated to us in writing that his workload is extensive, he handed over to Dr. Sipho Kasikoyana, a female deputy vice chancellor, a deputy chairperson. On the point of UKZN, I think DG has spoken to this matter. We are engaging UKZN, particularly on the violence on campus, and we notice regret the murder of the student, and I think this is over the past weekend, the stabbing of one student by another. Violence is a cause of concern, and DG has spoken to that. We are, in fact, have arranged another security meeting towards the end of this month in June to continue with the outcomes and implementation plan with the security groupings from the different institutions. And I will conclude today, Chair. You have indicated earlier on that you would, in your opening, Chair, that you would want to hear about student governance. We don't have that in the presentation, but I think it's important. I do have a separate presentation. I just think it's important that I quickly highlight that we do, we have established a committee with the deans of students, which meets quite regularly with all the institutions. They are our early alert system. They we brief one another on concerns, and they've been very, very helpful, I must indicate. But we must acknowledge that, yes, at WITS, students, because of this intervention, are meeting weekly to address issues on joint programs. And it's now during exam time, so they're not meeting as frequently. But, of course, we are concerned about the relationship between management and the students there. UCT, we intervened, Chair, and there is a mediation agreement in place assigned by both management and students, which is still in place, as far as we are aware, to allow for healthy engagements. With UKZN, there are, again, frequent engagements between SRC and management, but, of course, we believe those relationships can be enhanced. And maybe the model to follow is that established by UWC, which has instituted weekly and monthly meetings between the university leadership and the student groupings. CPUT remains on red alert. It is quite evident there that the stakeholder relationships between management and students are not where they should be, and we've pointed that out to them. Our team, in fact, meets with the students as often as they can, led by Ms. Sotenjwa. University of Limpopo, we started with quite, I suppose I must say, irritation from students around the funding issues, but that has quietened down again because management has been sitting quite regularly with the students. And I think I will end that, Chair, but those are the institutions that we flagged for the purpose of this meeting. Thanks. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, with regards to the last input, which is not part of the report, I think we have a responsibility to provide in writing to the committee a full detail of that aspect, because we agree fully that we would not have completed any input around governance if we did not mention interventions that interacts with students and student leadership. And I think we apologize that this comes as a side comment when it is supposed to be the core message that we are presenting today. And we commit that within 7 days we would have provided you with the full detail of these interventions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG, and to DDG Sotsikwa. At this point, we take comments, questions, recommendations from members, and then after members have asked their questions, we'll take a body break, and then I'll afford you an opportunity to consolidate what members would have said. I think from my side, I'll start with Honourable Chikwambana. And then I'll start at the back, actually. So I'll go Honorable Khakhao, Honorable Ngobo, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Litie, Honorable Chikwambana, Honorable Sibiya, Honorable Mananiso, Honorable Chira, Honorable Mananiso. So we'll go like that. I'm not going to... I'm not going to rhetoric much, but we and I want to speak on legislation maybe. We've started work as a committee on institutional autonomy and cooperative governance, and we were trying to see if there is a need to amend the Higher Education Act in order to create a more conducive environment for these two elements to coexist. And what really came out of those discussions, colleagues, during the colloquium that we had on institutional autonomy was that, look, if people really wanted to be honest, we could use the Higher Education Act as is to achieve what we want to achieve. However, as the Deputy Minister actually articulated that day, people in the sector, stakeholders in the sector, we opportunistically use or interpret the Higher Education Act as it speaks to institutional autonomy and cooperative governance to what we want to achieve in that particular moment. And that's the greatest limitation that we have. And, you know, ideally you'd want to be in a society where you can gather stakeholders and say, let's be honest about what the Act says and let's all get our acts together and implement the Act as it is because there's no problem. But clearly we are sort of being pushed into a corner where we have to make amendments to the Act so that the developmental agenda of government also finds expression in what is taking place in our universities in particular. So we don't really have a problem in the TVET colleges, and it's because this notion of institutional autonomy is not there in the case of TVET colleges, right? But in our universities, we have this problem. But again, there's a caution that says, should we really be making legislative amendments on the basis of personalities? Because it is a personality issue. So because you have a Vilakazi or whoever who think they are beyond reproach, who think they're beyond the societies in which these universities exist within, then we must amend legislation to accommodate these personalities. And that's not how we're supposed to be governing this country. So, colleagues, that's an ongoing conversation that we need to have. We started it as this committee, but we all know the amount of work that we have to do. But let's see what more we can try and do in this term. If not, it will have to be part of the legacy report that we give to the 7th administration to say this is what we've been able to do so far. This is the perspective that we have. What more could be done to try and really aid government to drive a developmental agenda through our institutions of higher learning, which are not ivory towers in our community. So that's just to remind us where we are as a committee in terms of work being done on legislation that could aid and support effective governance in the sector. DG, I just on the profile of the councils, I'm just confused when it comes to WITS and UNISA. UNISA, in fact, there's no account on the vacancies there. Like there's 30, and then it says 17 is the council size. That's quite drastic. It's like almost half. So where's the other half? And then WITS as well. Yes, there's an account of 2 ministerial positions, 3 council. So it becomes 5-7. And then it's 30. Then it says 7. So where's the rest? So I'm a bit confused there as well. I'm glad that you tried to highlight, beyond what is stated in your slides. And whoever's working on the slides recently, we must commend them. They're becoming better. There's templates, things like that. We like those things. So whoever's been doing that, they must continue, of course. But I know Honorable Mananis will say they must be consistent in how they present everything. But the issue of the matter of looking into student governance when we speak about governance is important, because when there's no good relationship between students, labor, well, management and council and the stakeholders like students and labor, then you have instability in the institution, and therefore the core mandate of the institution, which is the academic program, will be hampered. So CPUT, you need to zoom into that. There's even contestation of the SRC and the legitimacy of the SRC elections and all of that. And that, from a governance perspective, is not how it's supposed to be. DUT, I must commend, we often raise issues, but one must also say when we are seeing progress. And at DUT, there has been stability in the past couple of years, and that must be noted. Well, maybe 2 years, I think. And that must be commended. Fewer protests. When we went for our oversight beginning of the year, really you saw better synergy between, or greater synergy between management and students and just, generally the various stakeholders there. And that must be something we note. I think I spoke to MUT in my opening remarks. I don't think the students and the vice chancellor at Rhodes University have a fairly good relationship. I think they find the vice chancellor there to be quite a bully. SMU, there's always these reoccurring issues around student accommodation and lack of, there's like a trust deficit between management and what they commit to in terms of the student accommodation and certain accommodations that we're not committed to now being, so there's just on the topic of our institutions being used as spaces for personal accumulation or, being business. I think we need to look into SMU there, because I think there's a trust deficit between students and management in terms of that. Forte, I think as a committee, colleagues, and this is a matter that I know we've all been concerned about, and just to remind us that when the minister went to Forte in the beginning of the year, he extended an invite to the chairperson of the portfolio committee. And we went and we tried to engage the VC, and he did not want to engage us, which was shocking, because you say to the country, tell the president that you are in trouble and no one cares. And then everyone comes running down, and then you don't want to engage them. and you cast aspersions to say they are here to grandstand and they are here to do all sorts of things, which makes it very difficult then. So when you call us out to say you're in trouble, and we also say, oh, you know what, maybe there was oversight on our side, let's go and intervene, and then you don't want our intervention. It did not sit well, colleagues, when we went. And we engaged, however, with the various other stakeholders who were also very concerned with what is happening. And they, you know, the stakeholders there seems to feel as though there's a lot that's being said about the institution that they're not really aware of. And this in the main was the students and workers. And then we called as a committee the state of security in the sector. We called a meeting with the department for the department to brief us on the state of security in the sector. And of course it was by and large informed by Forte, but it was also informed by what we saw during our oversight visit, where we saw various principals and vice-chancellors surrounded by bodyguards, Mama AK-47, in a space of teaching and learning. And that was also a way of us as a committee saying, let's zoom into what is also happening at Forte, but that doesn't only affect Forte, but many other institutions. But these issues at Forte are reoccurring, Minister. And it will be important that you and your team go there and you find out, and hopefully the VC will make time for you. I mean, not so long ago, I think Honorable King, Honorable Khakhao, if I'm not mistaken, I think you went to Forte. And so, Minister, you need to go and see what's happening and come and brief us. And at some point, the committee will also have to engage with Forte itself. But the reason why I'm saying you must go, Minister, is because you tried to go and things didn't go well, but you must go back. And all of us in this accountability ecosystem have a role to play. Council is the first sort of point of oversight that must be conducted over an institution. You then become the next, and then we also come in. So every single one of us in this accountability ecosystem need to play our part. And so we will require for your team and yourself, Minister, to go back to Forte, and then at some point we have to engage. Colleagues, we've received a letter from the convocation of Forte. We've received numerous, sort of letters from different stakeholders saying they are concerned with what's happening at Forte. And it's from different sides, and everyone has a different story. So we need to get to the bottom of what is happening at Forte. At UKZN, Honorable Shikwamban and Honorable Chila, I hope you have managed to hopefully spoke to Honorable Mokhale before coming into this meeting, because he was very big on UKZN coming to speak to us, particularly on the issues of the tensions between management and the student leadership. Honorable Mokhale's feel was that the UKZN Vice-Chancellor just has a very bully sort of unapproachable relationship with the student leadership there. So besides these issues that you've raised, DG, on student accommodation, there was this issue as well of tensions between the SRC and the VC at UKZN, and that's something that Honorable Mokhale was very concerned about, and that's why we also lifted it here. On UP, I think there are these recent issues, but they had a very weird approach, very, like Uvilagas, the kids, you know, Honorable Chula went to UP. You know, I can't foresee a situation where after one day you start suspending students at the University of Pretoria, really. It's, yeah, you know. So the personality is there, but I guess the person is gone. But some characteristics of an institution are not only about individuals. It could be the posture of the senior management. It could be the posture of council. It could be the posture of whoever funds the institution. So we really need to look into the University of Pretoria in terms of the tensions between students there. On Stellenbosch University, DG, we would appreciate a follow-up engagement on what exactly is happening there, because there is a lot of hearsay, and yeah, we're not sure what the facts are there. At UNI, then, the issue of mafias and all of that, and this, you know, people turning the institution into a business and feeling entitled to certain opportunities at the institution is a huge hindrance as well to the vice chancellor's leadership. So the vice chancellor seems to be trying to turn the tide there, but he's continuously threatened. And this was the same reality that the vice chancellor of UniZulu was being faced with when she was trying to turn the tide. And of course, we would have had interest in that because she's also a woman, and we cannot have women leaders in the sector not thriving on the basis of people who have other interests. And of course, you've spoken at large, VC, DG, about the VC at, well, you didn't say much, but you said a lot about the VC at Wits University. Very strong in certain aspects, but not so much in others. We would appreciate if you could send us, okay, no, let me leave that. UCT, you know, I'm a bit confused with what's happening at UCT, Minister, because how I understand certain processes is that you conclude an investigation, and then you say, from the investigation, this is what we recommend, and then you act. Now, so much has happened at UCT, and now understanding that this panel has not concluded its work. This panel is still going to finish its work, and then it's going to report to the minister, and the minister will then say, hey, maybe we must put it under administration, or hey, maybe we must put in an independent assessor, or, you know. But now they've removed, well, not that they've removed, and this is what the hindrance of a, what do you call it, of a NDA, non-disclosure agreement, is. A university is a public institution, and therefore it renders a public good of education. And therefore, whatever happens in a university would be of public interest. Now, it is of public interest for us to have black women leading our institutions of higher learning. So when a black woman resigns or takes early retirement or is suspended or whatever it is, there will be public interest in what could have unfolded there. So you have a situation where Prof. Pakeng is then given a certain amount for early retirement. And the perception is that at an institution like UCT, she was under attack. Her leadership was under attack. There's a notion that black women are not being supported to thrive in leading a huge institution like the University of Cape Town. So there's a whole lot of perception, you know, on what could have unfolded there. So when the terms of reference of the panel, of the five-person panel, say that they won't look back to what could have led to the early retirement or resignation of Prof. Pakeng, but will look into the resignation and retirement, etc., of DVCs, of deans, and so forth, and this is on the basis of the NDA, it's confusing, because if we are saying the whole hullabaloo at UCT was informed by Ngonyama and Pakeng not being honest about the resignation of a particular of Linda, then when we look into what Linda and everyone else says to be the reason why they resigned, and we are it is said that they were not honest about the resignation, then they should come back to give their account, so that, because we're not doing this for them. It's not about them actually in the end. It's about the institution, which forms part and parcel of this greater ecosystem of the PSET system. So it's the same way when we did the inquiry on Mbati and Univen. It was not about really in the end Mbati and Univen. It was about ensuring that unfair dismissal, that gender-based violence, that sexual harassment in our institutions of higher learning is better managed going into the future. So when we don't have all players coming on board, and you know, we have both sides of the story, how are we supposed to make sure that something of this nature doesn't happen again? So it almost looks like things happen in our sector, and to an Imali, let's move past this moment. So I think it would be important, Minister, that Council brings us into confidence as a committee, as a sector, on the fact that this panel is really, the terms of reference of this panel really seek to do what is best for the institution, which is part of this differentiated whole called the PSET system. So that's just my take on UCT. I'm not going to go into UNISA. Honourable Lithie, Honourable Mananisa, I hope you'll cover me there. So I'm not going to go into that. But that's just my take, I think, at the moment on UCT in the main. I think I've spoken on UKZN. On Forte, I think we should call them in. But we first would like the minister to go there himself and then brief us, of course. All right. Honorable Khakhao.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you, colleagues, and everyone here. I'd firstly like to apologize for being late. I think, you know, I was standing at the bus stop waiting for a bus that had long left, so I just had to drive here, but I'm here. Good morning, and I hope everyone is warm and happy, although this agenda is not the cutest we've had. I'm just going to touch on three institutions, Chair, because I think there's more than enough of us to touch on the rest. The first one is just a clarity-seeking question on VUT. The information on slide 11 is very awkward for me, because it seems weird that there's tension that's happening between a VC and a council chair, and then somebody resigns, and then after they resign, there's a special leave, and then after that, a person is dead. I mean, it's possible that there could be a coincidence, sure. I mean, life is weird. But given the nature of the kind of battles that have been happening within institutions of higher learning and in this particular VUT, it smells very fishy. And I would want to then know if the department knows, is it the person had cancer? Did they have a headache? Did they just wake up dead? What happened? Do you have that information? If you do, please share it. That way it makes sense for us, and I'm not alarmed that there was a hit on Ndata Mugwen. Not in Ndata Mugwen, on who's the other person? Who? Eke Khwadi. Thank you. So if we can get that information, that's just that. The two institutions I want to focus on is UCT and Forte, Chairperson. Let's first deal with UCT. I think for me, having served in that council as the SRC president when Mampakeng was sworn in as the vice chancellor, it's very sad actually that this is what's happening at the institution. And I think for me, there's a missing element here in conversations around the mess that is now UCT. Two elements. One, everybody seems to not want to look back to the mess that Max Price had left for BC Packing to lead the institution. And I think that's very important to look into, because the reason why I have grasped with the legacy of Dr. Price is because of the relationship that in his later years, actually since Rhodes must fall, until his resignation, the relationship he had with student formations, politically so, within the institution. There's a lot that was compromised at that institution around the decorum of not only the student populace but the staff component within the institution that led to very weird decisions that were taken around how matters were going to be dealt with, around discipline within the institution. And therefore, the leadership was just completely there. It was a problem. And these were problems that were seen, Chairperson, even throughout the interview process of the candidates of Vice-Chancellor, because not only was UCT battling with how to show up in a transformative way given what society is requesting UCT to do, but there's also a challenge of how much transformation can the institution take at the first bite, number one. Number two, who can do that? And three, what kind of resources and support would be necessary to ensure that the person that is trying to introduce that is able to receive it, right? And that's a problem, because I remember specifically cautioning around these things, because, one, it's very easy for us to, looking at what's going on in the media, assume that what you just said now, the speculation that it's an attack on a black woman leader who was the first black woman leader who just... But if you know the true history of the institution, you know what that was happening within that institution. And so I agree with you, though, on this point, that it is very important for us to not, in this room, be speculating, but to have the truth. And the way to get to the truth is to look at the entire history of the institution. That way you will know how is it that we had research units that were established somehow within the institution to silence certain people, to give appraisals to other people, how certain resolutions let's keep them resolutions, were made within the institution in favor and against certain academics within the institution. So that's where I'm trying to get, and that's why I'm very frustrated with the NDA, because I know that this committee, since I've been here, Gepov, has been calling for clarity on this. And so for me, I don't understand how the department goes and participates in NDAs knowing that we requested information. Why not come, tell us the story, and then go sign your NDA? Why are you like, for, unless I need to be educated around what it is I don't understand, and I'm happy, please tell me what don't I understand? Because for me, NDA means from the moment I've signed this at 11:19 on the 14th of June, as of that moment, I can't speak further. But prior to that, I can. And this is all that the committee has been trying to request, particularly because...
Yes. I'm only coming in because I want you to be able
to move forward,
make a better input.
Okay.
I really don't mean to disrespect you at all.
Yes.
DDG Sokwekwa said the NDA was signed between council and Prof Pakeng. So when they come in, they find that. So it's not the department. So the department is just as frustrated as us. Yes.
So I appreciate you. Thank you. Yes, because the next question I was going to ask here was, who else are the people that signed the NDA? And yes. So, okay, if that's the case, then thank you. Thank you very much. I apologize. I withdraw everything. I'm not accusing you anymore. So, okay. So that's the frustration they had. But, okay, so... But even still, Gay Chairperson, even before the NDA that was signed between the Vice-Chancellor and the university, the former Vice-Chancellor and the university, there was still a window. I think for me is, and I'm also not downplaying the sensitivity and how tricky things are to try to get this kind of information, but because it could have easily been foreseen that given how messy this is, it's going to lead us there. So it would have required a proactive approach to make sure that we cover ourselves to ensure that our participation and how we show up is in the best is maximized. So that's just what I'm trying to understand. But I mean, we can't cry over spilled milk now. It is what it is. But perhaps this case study is important for the future. It's for us to not dilly-dally around taking decisions and steps to act, unless the our dilly-dallying is in our best interest. Then let's not. But I'll leave that UCT thing there because, yeah. And for me, it's personal for me. It is. It's very personal. And there's things that were very unnecessary in Jay that let us here that could have really been managed easily. So for Chair, you are right. We
maybe Chair, I'm sorry. We must remove the N from the NDA, and then we clear who really is frustrating us.
Also, you're out of order, Minister.
No, but Minister is in
incredibly out of order.
We always want him in the committee, but when he's here,
he's a problem.
Things sometimes. Don't mind him.
Because if I were to respond, about the history of the DA and UCT Council, it must be cute.
Don't mind him, Honourable Kaha. When I stay on course.
Thank you very much. You must be sanctioned equally, Minister. So, So you were right. We were there, and a lot came out, and. So I, as much as we are waiting for that, and we've been waiting actually for a briefing, and you've asked the minister to go back, I'm going to lay it down, and I'm happy that the minister is here to respond to things that I think he and the department would have a good shot to responding to now in the meantime, particularly because they have heavy political nuances around them. So the first thing that I would like the minister to give clarity to the committee around is the department's relationship and the premier of the Eastern Cape's relationship with Prof. Derek Swartz. Should I repeat that? Was that not clear? Okay. So please clarify the relationship between the department, particularly your office minister, the premier of the Eastern Cape's office, and Prof. Derek Swartz. What is that relationship? Break it down. Just assume I know nothing and just educate me on that relationship. That's what I'm asking. That's number one. Number two, I need to know, Minister, there are allegations that the request for the SIU and proclamation reached your office 9 months before you could take a decision to give the green light. So I don't want to accuse you and say, Gutivele, when you are not here for this as minister. But I would like to know whether, one, if that is true, why is it that it took that long? What was it that your office was deliberating on to reach that decision? Or whether it's an absolute lie?
Sorry, can you please repeat that again?
Am I not audible?
Just try it differently. Just say it again.
Okay. So maybe, Minister, you would want to see me to hear me? Yeah, okay. Okay, I think I understand.
So I'm going to move so that you can...
So... Minister was saying, Uthi, so obviously when such happens at institutions, your office is made aware. Uthi, this is the intention, we need a proclamation, and there's an investigation that's supposed to happen, and we asha. And you as the minister must have your say. And the information received is that you dilly-dallied for 9 months. You took forever to respond. until Konagele, Sebusha, everybody is now aware of what's going on, then only were you at a position to give the green light. Again, that's why I'm saying I would like you to respond so that it's not an assumption that this is true altogether. It's not an allegation, but a matter of on the record, on your behalf. So the other thing that I need to deal with is, obviously, again, notwithstanding that we still have a report that still needs to come back to tell us what exactly the issue at Fort Hay is. But on the power of Ndade Idioma within the institution, how he was appointed within the institution, number one. Number two, the processing of applications for qualifications outside of Senate approvals, outside of Senate approvals, and pretty much going under the carpet and having their own operation that excluded prerequisite qualifications or requirements for students, in most cases politically connected students. What is your understanding of this? Are you aware of this? Are you not? Again, the last one, for the purpose of just, yeah. So there have been very awkward communication all over around politicians who have benefited from ill-gotten qualifications within this institution. There's a whole list of them. And we, as a committee, there's still confusion around whether these are being investigated and how are they being investigated, whether there has been proof given that people really do hold the qualifications, they hold honestly and not in an ill-gotten manner. Are you able to confidently clear those names before the committee or not? But I'll rest there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khakhao. Honorable Ngoba.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, colleagues. Chairperson, I will start with my questions to the minister. The minister in his remarks mentioned that there are troublemakers in the system, people who are moving from one university to another, having caused damage, and then they move to the next university without the system being able to pick those up. So I just want to find out from the minister and the department, what is it that the department is doing to try and ensure that people who leave institutions after having caused trouble and go to another institution, they are being able to be picked up and make sure that we remove them from the system. I think it's not enough to say that we are not able to pick them up. I think that there has to be something that the department does about it, so that we can try and blacklist people and make sure that they don't stay in our system and continue causing trouble. And also the effectiveness of the administration process, I just want to find out what does the department think of the administration process? Is it effective, especially given that there are institutions like MUT and VUT that have been under administration for more than once, so which clearly means that the first time they were put under administration, that process did not work. And also the minister spoke about possible future legislative changes that maybe the seventh administration will need to look at. So I just want to find out from the minister if he's able to indicate to us the legislative leaks or the gaps that the minister thinks we must plug in order to try and make it easy in the sector. So the legislative changes that the minister thinks we need to make that he spoke about. And then on UNISA, the independent assessor's report made recommendations to both the department and UNISA. And all, I just want to find out if there is an action plan from the side of the department to implement the recommendations of the independent assessor. And also I just want to find out from the department if, to what extent have the department gone to implement the recommendations of the MTT. And lastly, to the DGG, the DGG indicated that the UWC model regarding the interaction between management and students should be followed by other institutions, and that other universities can look at emulating that model. So I just want to find out if this model has been shared with other universities as well, and maybe a recommendation has been made to other universities that they must follow that model. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Boshoff.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm very cautious not to put on my microphone before you have recognized me, because the chairperson sent me back to my chair the other day with one of the mini plenaries. Honorable Chair and Honorable Minister, thank you very much. I also read recently the book written by Prof. Jonathan Janssen and published earlier this year, I think in March of this year, about universities, and it's a little bit like that table of all the universities just expanded in many pages. And I thought while reading that another person would use the same source material than he did and trusted the other side where there's a dispute between two groups. And what he set out is, if I could summarize it, this is a 300-page book like this, is to say something like, okay, very often you have tension between management and governance, the council and the vice chancellor in persons, or the chair of the council, and then the whole question about what is it all about? Is it about the academic project, or is it about acquirement of funds and whatever, and you also referred to that. I just thought that, you know, these things are never objective. It's always from which side you look, and the villain in one story could be the hero in another, and the other way around. Now, universities, I think, are always centers of dynamic tension. On the one side, you have a pervasive culture in a specific institution, and on the other side, you have a new generation of students every 4 years. You do something now thoroughly, and in 4 years' time, there's not a student left who knows anything about it. I've experienced with a hostel where I used to stay at the University of Pretoria, that something might have started to happen 3 years ago, and in this year the students will say, no, we do it because it's tradition. But the tradition is still wears nappies. Then also the part of the dynamic tension of which every university on its own you know, has to deal with is you have global demands, you have local needs. You need a certain measure of order to be able to work, and yet you have a vibrant democracy with students especially on the forefront as the avant-garde of democratic practices and thinking and so on. Then you have on the one side the intellectual life. You want to educate intellectual people, but then you have the desire to have qualifications. You always have students who don't give a damn about intellectual life as long as they have a qualification making them eligible for a nice job afterwards. It's also a tension. The tension between the academic project and the university as an economic role player, which you mentioned, and then the academic project and governance. I mean, you could have very good governance, but the content of the academic project is, well, not equally well, or the opposite. You could have a very good academic content, but governance doesn't equal that. I was interested when I recently walked into one of my school friends. He's a medical doctor, and I asked him, now, what is your training at Sefako Maghato University these days? How is it? And he said, it's excellent. They're doing better than the University of Pretoria. So it's interesting. It's, you know, people expect things, and then you might get something. I just wrote down two examples of, you know, things that people maybe don't expect, but sometimes you may get it, like a modest American or a well-read hobo. You get these, that you don't expect to see these things together, so you, but sometimes you do. Now, in the positive sense, we expect a good governance structure to be necessarily aligned with a good academic life, but it's not always, sometimes it is. And then I thought to say that we need to cultivate an indigenous responsive academic culture, informal knowledge that universities will not be clones of each other, but in fact represent different academic traditions which contribute to the variety of the national academic offering. But the one thing that I'm that I think is, one cannot legislate or fund a positive academic culture into existence, or in the other way around. You can't legislate a negative culture out of existence. We need more than funds. We need more than legislation. We need actually to take this tension, which I tried to illustrate with some different elements which are in tension with one in another. They are both essential, but they don't engender one another necessarily. There has to be some point of equilibrium being found between these things which are in tension. And that would mean that we will never arrive. We will always be in process. The main point is that we have to progress, but we will never be at the point that we can say, okay, now we've reached the ideal 100% academic setup, and therefore this committee is one that will always have a job. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Bishop. Honourable Gondo.
Thanks, Chair. Listen to you, Chairperson, Honourable Minister, DG colleagues. Mine have so small to contribute. As always, I don't like to talk that much about many things, but I like to be specific on some matters that I think are of the concern. Firstly, the issue of UKZN, I think I've been talking about this for several times, Chair. I think now I'm happy that I'm dedicated, that whatever that I say, I don't wake up in the morning and say there's a problem there. Because before I speak about something, I always try to verify my facts. But what I want to say today about this, as it is presented now and verified that it's happening, it is not UKZN only. It is happening in almost most of our institutions. This thing of accommodation has been long overdue, giving us headaches. We've even debated about the cap of student accommodation. Yeah, we had a lot of debate talking to each other, but the thing that caused that is this, what is being added in the UKZN. So I think we need to go deeper, even into other institutions, because it's not happening in UKZN only. That's what I wanted to say on that. Then we come to MU teacher. While we're doing oversight, I spoke about, on my comments there, I spoke about student leaders who were suspended and thereafter being expelled from the institution in MU without proper investigation processes to reach to that stage. It was then too easy decision to just cut off the life, a starting life of a student, of a young person, then without facts, we just expelled. We know what happened, Chair, when we have been expelled from the institution. We have been closed doors for almost all other institutions too, for a certain time. Then, after I spoke to that oversight, thereafter I was followed by some emails. Now, it was official that were investigated, suspended, and expelled from the same institution by the council that later on was dissolved. And the plea on those emails, it's a pity, Chair, that some of my information, when I was being robbed and attacked, they took all my stuff, some of the information about that, because I took my time to go and look to it closer. Some of the information gone by on that incident. But there are officials that were suspended. There was an investigation. But I'm happy that by that, the due process was taken. They were suspended, investigation done, alleged that the report from the investigation team, they said that it was kept by the dissolved council. And they were saying, now because the minister certified himself that the council had some shenanigans that they were doing in that institution and decided to dissolve that council. And they were verified after that that the allegation that we put on them, and later on they were expelled from the institution, were not proper. So their plea to me was that, is there anything that can be done so that they're going to be remembered and taken back to their work? Because now it's verified that they were expelled with no fact. Yeah, it's MUT. If Chair, I will get a way to communicate it with the, I know if the DG to resolve, because they wanted an urgent intervention so that they can be helped. So that they will get their work back. So I think I will talk to the DJ and so that we give the information, and I'll try to collect that information that I lost and bring it to the DJ so that he'll work on the matter. I think other matters have been touched on. I don't like to repeat what has been said. And you know, there's our we talk about 30 minutes to an hour, so I can't disturb him on the platform, but I wanted to touch on these two matters, Chair. Thank you.
I think I encourage the behavior, Honorable Ibia. But yeah, we'll make sure that's noted. We'll make sure that you send the information to the DJ. Honorable Ibia.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to yourself, Minister, DG, the team from the department and the ministry. Chair, maybe let me start by clarifying my understanding of this meeting. My understanding Chair, is that we have been requested to get governance-related issues at our institutions so that, you know, from the department, from an aerial point of view, so that when we're dealing with individual institutions, at least we have received this information. And if my understanding then is correct, it will be almost impossible for us to expect the department and the minister to answer us on the technical issues that would have happened at these institutions. So what is supposed to happen is that you must ask clarity seeking on the overall or the helicopter view of what has been presented to us. Questions which you have asked about what's happening with if the statute of a university says you have 30 members and the department is reporting 17. We've also had, in this case we're talking about UNISA, we also know that few of them might have resigned now. What is the number there? What was the number before? And what were the challenges in filling those posts? That is what the department is supposed to assist us with. Let's welcome the presentation from the department, the minister's opening as well. I want to welcome especially the what Minister spoke about earlier, it was also covered in the presentation, about the thinking around probably establishing a governance branch in the department. We want to welcome that, Minister. We hope that you can, you know, expedite that process. Maybe let's push it faster. Noting that, you know, we have 26 universities, 50 TVET colleges, 21 CITAS, 9 CET colleges, all of them we have councils or board component of them. So maybe it will be important if we have a dedicated team of people with governance expertise to try and assist us with this issue of governance, I think. But we also must have this governance structure of yours must also look at capacitating properly our newly elected SRCs at our institutions. Some of us, Minister, were fortunate to be SRCs at some point in our lives when we were young, when I was the age of Honorable Zondo here next to me. I was, you know, I happened to be an SRC a member at the time. There was a dedication or dedicated intention to capacitate us as newly elected. You know, I'm happy that in your report you have mentioned that Yusuf and Saus have agreed, you know, agreed to sign sort of a pact, not moonshot, but to sign off a pact of some sort, you know, on the do's and don'ts during strikes. I think that will go a long way in in assisting us, you know, because currently, I think it was 3 years ago, we had received a report from your department that in one particular year or few years, we had damage to property of more than 300 million. I think it was through that at the beginning of 1 year, which is something we can't afford to have at this point. I want to support, Chair, that maybe we need to have in the next term, in your program, when you put together program, let's include an engagement with UNISA Council, UCT Council. Let's include in our program an engagement with Fort Hare, and also at Fort Hare we must also bring the VC there, because I know. Yeah, well, that VC can't want us to bring him here with a warrant. That VC met Honorable Khakhao and Honorable King recently. So we must bring him to the committee. And if he refuses, we must indeed summon him in the next quarter as early as possible when we open, Chair. And we must put together enough time for us to have proper engagement with these institutions. Maybe instead of having three institutions, let's have two. And if possible, maybe let's apply others, let's meet them in the evening. Let's apply to Parliament so that, because next term will be short, so let's apply more for, maybe for Wednesday during the day, then allow Parliament, then meet them again in the others in the evening. Because some of these issues, I mean, take UCT for an example. Honestly, Minister, I don't understand this thing of non-disclosure. I honestly don't understand. It might be that deals are being struck, everybody there is at fault. So they felt, you know what, because you had this ace card for me and I have this ace card for you, let's rather agree that let's part ways, but let's not investigate one another. It can be. Who's paying for, whose man is that? I always make a point, Minister, that every year budget vote 17 appropriates billions of rand to these institutions. Now we're voting for budget. Now, last week, or is it, yeah, last week. Or, and according to your own APPs, around 44 billion will go to this, from us, will go to these universities. And is this the money that they are using to strike these deals? Where do they get? So it can be that we just sit back and not do anything. On the UCT issue, I think, you know, I'm battling to convince myself. I've got two arguments here. We might struggle to get the former VC because she's no longer in the employ there. We might struggle to get the former chair and the former deputy chair to really find out what really happened. Another, you know, argument that I have in the head is that maybe again the problem will be time, because the sixth administration is about to end. But I would have strongly suggested that we look at having what do you call that, a full inquiry into what really happened, because at the face of it, Minister, from distance, it does really look like there's a target on female leaders who happen to be black at that institution, at the face of it. But is it really what is happening? And what can we do to really find out these things there? So it's something that, you know, I was trying to convince myself on the pros and cons of that, but maybe you colleagues will then assist us. So I will not go into, I mean, issues of what's happening there on slide 20. So I want to suggest, Chair, that we bring them back. We bring them as soon as possible, and maybe have a because they might come here and tell us about non-disclosure. And I want to suggest, Chair, that before we even write it to them, maybe let's have a conversation with our legal team and check what is it that we can get out of these people with that non-disclosure. What does it mean? You know, how far can we really move? You know, so that when we bring them, at least we know how far we can go. And I suggest, Chair, that even when we invite them, we must be clear on what questions they must respond to. So when we put together questions, they must not come here and tell us no. They will send it to us in writing. In fact, our invite to them must be clear on specific things that would have happened at that institution, so that we don't have others thinking that indeed it's there's an attack on female leaders there. You know, there's an aggressive attitude by some to try and get rid of all kinds of black leaders there, because those are some of the allegations that we're hearing coming out of that institution. On UNISA, Chair, I hope we also invite them as early as possible, because there are serious allegations that are made today. Well, we interacted with the department and I think with UNISA after the MTT report, and we had a lot of issues that we raised out of the MTT report, which again suggested or recommended, Minister, that UNISA be put under administration. But if you look at the recommendation would have came from the investigation by this MTT report that was literally investigating the previous council. And then when it came out, it says that the university, even though it knows, they know that there would have been change in council. The term has expired and all of that. So we had welcomed at this committee that the department and your ministry had decided not to put UNISA under administration, but rather to appoint an independent assessor. The independent assessor has brought a report also suggesting that UNISA be put under administration. I don't know how to put this, but I want to maybe plead with you, Minister. I know that you have your own timelines, or your ministers its own timelines, but I want us to interrogate the Council of UNISA, Chair, and its management on some of the things that are raised there in the report. It's a pity that I'm not sure if in the same breath we can interrogate the assessor himself. I'm not sure. because again, when you look at, when you go through the report, it raises certain things, man, but it does not look like a well-balanced report. when you go through that report properly, the body of it, at least, you know, for lack of a better word, I'll say it's, at least it disappointed me to a certain extent. So I want to plead with you, Minister, that if possible, I know you have your own timelines guided by the Higher Education Act, but if possible, would have wanted, I want to suggest that we interrogate that council as this committee and management on certain things there. My worry is that if you take a decision, and maybe your decision is too drastic, we might not have an opportunity to interact with that council. So I want to plead with you that if it's possible, maybe wait a little bit for us to engage with that council and management. We bring them here and ask them a few questions. Maybe there might not be few, but ask them some questions that we believe that they must answer. And to yourself, you have reported, DG, that you've had 16 assessors reports. I'm not sure how many administration have you or all our institutions went into. But if you have done that assessment, can you tell us how effective is this administration process of PIROT? And I'm asking this given the fact that we know that we have repeat offenders who have went into administration more than once. How effective is that process? You know, MUT, they've went again, VUT, shame. They've been there. And what are the cost implications, DG, of the sector, or for the sector for the administration process? What is the cost implication there? And if you look at your own analysis, have you had any issues with administrators when they are in the administration period? If so, what kind of issues have you had? and maybe lastly on that part, what support systems have you provided to this institution's post administration process or period? So what kind of support system from the department have you provided to ensure that there is no regression, they don't go back? I'm asking this because Honorable Khakhao touched a little bit on the issue of VUT, sorry, which comes from administration now, and immediately the first chair of council after administration was a young woman resigned, citing, you know, some of the, you know, working a council that looked like it was on shaky grounds and all of that. You know, so those are some of the signs that if you had read the previous assessor's report of VUT, you would have seen that that assessor's report would have also mentioned issues of governance structure there that is at war with each other, or had formed factions within that council. Some of them were working with some in management and all of those things. Yeah, I think she was trying to remove the end there on the NDA. And maybe lastly, Chair, maybe second lastly, the issue of UKZN. You know, Minister, I went to UKZN when I was young. When UKZN was at the time with the vice chancellor there called Professor Mahoba. That institution was well run. Sometimes we'd hate him when you're in student leadership because it was fair. But if you look back now in retrospect, you'll then realize that the institution was well run at that time. He would try and engage with us as student leaders before, unleashing the whole army on us. What is happening currently that at UKZN? I think we have a vice chancellor who is trigger happy, and I'm going to be careful with my words, because in 2019 I asked a question chair in this committee, and the question was around the number of the vice chancellors we have in this country who are from the diaspora. But I also said we must look at senior managers, DVCs, and all of that. And one journalist said I'm xenophobic. So I'm going to be very careful in how I ask this question. Noting brothers from the media also here, they might, I know. So there seemed to be a very aggressive attitude that is developed by the vice chancellor there at UKZN. So every time students disagree with them, they bring a whole army. So maybe Balatale SWAT, they go and get SWAT, from America to just come and kick doors. And we can't have our institutions behaving that way. We have a problem in this country, Minister, where senior management of our institutions believe they own these institutions. At VUT, students protested in February, at the beginning of February. They were put on suspension. Up until today, they have not been charged. I will not be accused of being politically affiliated or speaking for my people. Those ones are student command leaders. But they were charged in February, or they were suspended in February. They have not been charged. So what is that? The universities, they've written to the university many times. Some of them have forwarded me their email saying, this is what we have done. So this university people, managers, senior managers, treat these universities as if it's their own homes or own houses. They just unleash terror on students, which cannot be. You look at some of the issues the students are raising are true. And I said when we're with VUT, I said some of your senior managers are implicated on student accommodation fraud that is happening there, Chair. At VUT. You have not acted on them. But this student, just one allegation, suspension. So we must also have a way, Chair, of looking at management, senior management of these institutions, and maybe try to attend to their arrogant, aggressive nature of response to issues of students. So I suggest that we must look at Professor Nana there at UKZN, Minister. If it's possible, DG, maybe you must have a bilateral with that council and him. It can't be that every time the students are not happy, they are unleashed with very serious things. Lastly, Fort Hare Chair gives me a headache. University of Fort Hare Or maybe let me start with this one. When we invite Fort Heche, we must ask them a direct question. One of the questions I want us to ask them is that they must give us a list of all beneficiaries of those who entered through recognition of prior learning, all of them. because if we don't do that, we're going to get insinuations that those who have entered through RPL have done corruption. We're going to get insinuations that those who are benefiting through RPL belong to a certain political party. So we want them to bring it to us. And if there is there was a relationship between Fort Hare and the legislature of Eastern Cape on RPL, they must give us the list, including of all, they must also on the list note all MPLs there who belong to all political parties, so that we denounce this notion that the recognition of prior learning necessarily means corruption. But if there are those who have entered there ka corruption, again they must be exposed, and we must not, will not come here and say that such people, you know, it's RPL or RPL and every entered cable level 8. This one, they put him to RPL level 10. You know, so that must be exposed, and those who are involved must then face the music. But we must be careful what we say, especially on recognition of prior learning, because Minister, I know you spoke about it when we were doing the budget vote. It's an important piece of legislation that we must try and defend. And I agree fully with you on that part. But when we write to Fort Heche, we must be clear. We don't want them to come here and we'll send answers through a WhatsApp or through an email. They must come here with those answers, so that on that day when we're dealing with them, we're able to finish them. We must attend to governance issues at that institution. That institution seems to be the battleground or the battlefield for corruption. You know, from outside looking in, it looks like people there are just fighting for tenders. Maybe not at that institution alone, but at a number of our institutions. So we ought, even when we ask them, Chair, maybe we must get a list of all projects there. Who's having this project? Maybe give us, maybe let's do the SIU job for them. Give us the tender documents. What was it, how did you follow this thing, and all of that. So that when we are, you know, we're clear, we're satisfied ourselves that indeed those people are fighting and they're not fighting for money. I don't believe, Chair, that what is happening at 40 has got anything to do with the core business of that institution. I don't believe so. It has absolutely nothing to do with teaching and learning. It has everything to do with tenders. People are being shot and killed. Witnesses, when they are supposed to go to court, they are, you know, get off the road by a small van, they die. Well, there's a problem. Generally, there you can tell they are living like they're in Mexico. Well, when you are in Fort Hare, I'm sure even your life cover increases. You say you are working at Fort Hare, for 1 million barma, you must pay 10,000 a month. There it's a high risk area. And we can't allow that to continue to happen to a person. So I think we must We must bring them, but when we do check, we ought to write to them specific questions, just like with UNISA and UCT. And I suggest, Chair, that immediately at the beginning of the third term, we bring them here. But, Minister, we ask you that maybe do consider the issue that when we are dealing with UNISA, we want them to answer certain questions. We want them to be here physically. If they are no longer in the council or employee of that university, they might not want to come and clarify us, just like we might struggle to get Mam Parking and former chair and former deputy chair of that council. Chair, apologies for taking slightly long. I just that some of the things they irritate the hell out of us. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Deputy. Honourable Yabo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me greet everyone present in the room, Minister, DG, your team, the department, honorable members, the team of the Minister, advisors. I will just launch into my submission. Having gone through some of the issues raised around the universities in front of us today, there seems to be a common thread. And the common thread, as far as the governance is concerned, is that it seems that the various stakeholders and this includes management, council, student leadership, labor, organized labor at that, seem to have a relationship with each other in the same institution that is almost a competitive. It is almost as if these groups of people have different interests altogether, as if they are not located in the same institution. It seems there is a problem with priorities. They are not congruent with each other. Labor has its own priorities, and these priorities have nothing to do with the institution. Council has its own priorities. These priorities have got nothing to do with the institution. Management, student leadership. I raise this because if these parties and stakeholders in the same institutions realize that the only priority that there is the well-being of the institution and the various stakeholders, and work together to ensure that the environment created there is meant to achieve that end result, I don't think we'd be having these many governance challenges. Each one works in a silo. Council works in a silo. And what we are seeing, Honorable Chair, is that we are seeing the entrenchment of factions, and I think Honorable Lizier touched on that thing. Councils have now become battleground of interest, and the interest is not academic excellence. The interest is financial in nature. Because if it was an interest that is dovetailed by academic excellence, we wouldn't see so many tensions brewing with this amount of frequency. It seems the problem of these universities is the general problem we see in the South African society. And this is something we must speak to very strongly. It is unbelievable that in this country you have people who make noise about corruption. And day in and day out, these are the people who bribe police officers not to give them traffic fines. when they are stopped on the road. And so they minimize their own problematic personalities or characters or lack of morals. And they want to amplify other areas where the same behavior persists on a larger scale. And it's a societal problem, Honorable Chair, we must confront now. And I say this because what we are seeing happen in institutions of higher learning is literally a mirror image of what happens across society. It cannot be that we have bred, even people who are supposed to be the best amongst us in society, academics, the intelligentsia of our country, that behave as if they do not have that they are not the advanced sect of society. People who are supposed to be the advanced sect of society are even more problematic than people who would say they are the bottom of the barrel of society. If we are going to use stratification as a point of reference, the problems that are emanating out of academic institutions need a thorough analysis on where they stem from. But I can tell you for free, this is a mirror image of a societal problem, generally. We have a scourge of people who are becoming less and less morally upright. People want to hide behind a lot of things, but we must call it for what it is. These battles we see are battles of Boroto. At least students will say it openly. When you speak to students in their comfort zone, they'll tell you, no, leadership must take us serious. We also want Boroto. There is a famous colloquial term now that is used everywhere, Araja Selo. Araja Selo. We are seeing battles of Araja Selo, and they are being carried out by people who have multiple qualifications. What a shame. What a shame. In places of knowledge production, research, academia, we expect to see a higher sense of consciousness and conscientiousness. And these are the hard truths, by the way. We can go to the technicalities, go to the numbers, go to the processes, go to adhering to legal frameworks, but at the heart of it, these are people who are willing to cast off any measure of decorum just so that they can have their piece of the pie. And you know what is going to be said by those who want to use these things as weaponized campaigns against the leading organization here in South. They are going to say, no, it's a cadre deployment. Well, let's tell you, in institutions of higher learning, the minister only has 5 ministerial appointments out of 30 human beings. Now you must tell us where this cadre deployment in institutions of higher learning finds traction, when in fact the number of those on those councils are sourced by the university. They are sourced by the university. So we must speak the truth. And I say this, Chen, I've been saying this from the first year we got elected, that the problem of corruption is not with us politicians. We don't sign off on any financial transactions. We don't sign off, Minister, you don't sign off on anything that has to do with money except to say, Lama budget apasiwe, appropriation yenziwe, I have imali. But the people who sign transactions day in and day out, that power legally flows from the DG right down to the last person. It doesn't flow on this side, that power. Those of us who have the time to go through the legal framework of our country, we know that the only thing that politicians have are the power to devolve human resource, appoint, disappoint, no money there, nothing. And so these battles that we see that are collapsing institutions of higher learning, SLALO, we must be very clear that these are battles of Moroto and Araja Selo. Those who are locked out want to come in. Those who are inside want to lock others outside and keep them there. If we are to send a full-on investigation across all these institutions of higher learning and use a method of investigation of follow the money, we will see what we are seeing with Forte, where a Tobile George receives $4 million from a service provider and extends contracts unilaterally in jail without following due process. We will see these things. We see more of them. In actual fact, we can close down the sector. But does that mean it's the minister? Should we say it's Dr. Blade in demand? Who's the problem? Because every day people wake up from their sleep and eating Kellogg's. They wake up. No, Dr. Blade is running the sector down. No, it's these people with PhDs who are given the mandate to run this institution. They run them down because they must fight over budgets. Who must get what? The buses, cafeteria, transport, accommodation. Hey, we must take ourselves seriously, South Africans. The sovereignty of this nation is undermined by people who are supposed to be the elite, intelligentsia. They sit in coffee shops, they carve out institutions, and a separate faction develops who says no, but these ones have already taken the chunk. We want something as well. Students are paid. People from communities will masquerade the students. There's a recent report that came out, I just forgot with which institution, where some of these people who are instigating a strike are not even from the university. They walk in, find a group of students, they have a fetch. No, that's trying another band. They don't even ask, so, sir, where's your student card? Can we see your identification? No one asks. But because young people are very persuasible, you know, President Owar Tambo characterized young people clearly. He characterized them clearly. He said, this cohort is persuasible at the slightest whim. They do not have a standpoint of their own. They change. They change with the wind. And it is a problem we have. Because some of these strikes, if we go to the bottom of it, are not even student issues. The report that we have in front of us on the work that was done by an investigator, they say, no, when Forte banned, there were engagements with the student leadership and there were agreements on the issues they were raising and the steps on how they were going to resolve them. After those meetings set, management and council were surprised to see students rioting when they were part of the meetings that said and agreed to the terms. So the question I have, which students then went out and said, no, but what we agreed with is not what we agree with, and start a riot that sees buildings torched? We must go and look into these things, Honorable Chair. And through you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, in Setswana they say Ritsenetswe. The identities of these characters who start these protests that end up burning buildings,
so that these buildings can be renovated by a financial interest or business interest. We must zoom into these things. It cannot be that it's normal that a sector is run down by rogue elements who have no particular origin or identification. And every single time, we can't find these people, but students are thrown into prisons. Students. Real students are thrown into prison. The instigators of problems are never found. When you ask, what happened? No, some group of guys came, they spoke to us, they incited us. Where are they now? No, we don't know. Because when this thing gathers momentum, students come in their numbers, the instigators, real instigators, disappear. This thing, if we do not look at it carefully, and I do not even want to go to the technicalities and the details of X, Y, and Z, K, I think honorable members have touched on those things. I just want to go high level. Our sovereignty will be undermined by agent provocateurs without faces who target a sector that seemingly does not have the capacity to sieve out who a student is and who is not a student. And I think that's where we need to go, really. But the leadership quality we have in these institutions that is defined by accumulation is going to set us off in a negative trajectory. Leadership that is driven purely by accumulation. Factions that are built around who gets to accumulate and their territorial protection, the protection cabals. That's a no. And that's a no. That this institution, we cannot let it go to these hands. It must stay with us. Especially the previously advantaged institutions. Stellenbosch, UCT, UP, VETS, you name them, Rhodes. The previously advantaged institutions, there is a pushback that we are seeing against transformation. We must zoom into that as soon as possible. I just wanted to touch on that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Yabo. I'm just cognizant that the minister needs to leave soon, so I'm sorry if I was intimidating you as you were speaking. Honorable Shibomba.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and let me also acknowledge that it's my first day today being with you here, but that is not an issue. We are going to be together for quite a long time. Well, Honorable Chair, in his remarks, the Minister and also the DG in the presentation, they touched on one issue that both of them agree on. Even the latter speaker was actually very loud on it and spoke about the corruption which is happening in the institutions of higher learning, the tendering system which is there, which is causing problems in the institutions of higher learning, where we see vice chancellors or the management of the universities being threatened by the mafias and people who happen to be doing business in the institution. It is good because some of us, we were student leaders. When I was an SRC president, it is the council of the university that was at the center of the businesses which are happening there in the university, and they want to run short as to who get what, who do not get what, and what must happen. So these instigators that the latter speaker spoke about, they are not far from us. They are in the council. They are not far from us. Because when I was a president, one member of a council came to my room at night to say, tomorrow we are going to a council meeting. Did you even prepare the speech for me? To say, this is what you must say. And this is the person you must attack. And after having attacked this person, this is your share. No. If I took it, I was not going to speak about this thing. So these things, they are just there in the council. When you see these fights within management and the council and the executive of the university, it is because these people already, they have actually committed themselves. Some of them are even running businesses. Some of the contracts which are there in the universities is management people, executive, who is their own businesses that are doing business with the university. And if someone comes from outside and wants to do business with the university, then they are the ones who are going to fight that person. And if it's the vice chancellor who's blocking that problem, then a certain council member who now his business or a business is about to be taken out will target the vice chancellor now. And when they start targeting the vice chancellor, they create a whole lot of issues and stories against the vice chancellor. And they put you, minister, to say you must go and fire, or you must go and propose that the vice chancellor must be removed. Because the problem is not the vice chancellor. The vice chancellor was trying to say, but no, man, you cannot do this. And that person, because now it's been compromised, the business has been compromised, and start cooking issues. Issues were cooked when I was a president in the University of Venda, and they called me to say, we are going to say this one. Harass this one. And even agreed with the person that must come and say, indeed this person harassed me. And now they connive. When they speak about when a president just, I told them that I'm not going to be part of those things. That's why if you don't check, the vice chancellors are going to die. Vice chancellors were going to remove them from the positions. Vice chancellors will be actually punished for nothing. And these council members are going to fight each other and kill each other. And after having finished each other, they are going to the students. Because when they approach you like that, and you do not agree to what they are approaching you for, and you don't even take their money, as a president or any person in the council who sits there in the council, you become the target as well. At some point, I had to even change where I stay, go and stay elsewhere where nobody knows where I'm staying. Because before the council sits, you are going to be given issues to say, this is what you must speak about. And if you don't speak about, you will see the eye or hear. I must see how I run after the meeting. So you're a student. At the same time, you are in a meeting like that. You are scared of your life that after the meeting, I don't know what is going to happen. So council members are the problem in all these things that we are faced with today. So, but that is not an issue. Let me touch on the issue of UNIF. There's a problem there in that institution. There's too much politics happening in that institution, and people are fighting for nothing but they are fighting for broad, or like the latter speaker said, it's all about money. It's all about who eats what and who eats. These things are happening everywhere, but I don't see, I mean, I don't understand why there's that thing that with the current VC of UNISA that they want her out. Maybe it's because she's blocking a lot of things there from the experience I had with the other universities there. When VCs start to block lot of things, the people are no longer benefiting, then they start to launch a war against those people. So the issue of UNISA, we must just look at it, a minister, and also advise your office to say there's no need for rushing to take decisions there in that UNISA. Let's focus on the main problem, council members who are problem there, influenced by unions, because there's too much union. That institution is too much unionized. That there's lot of union politics there. Lot of union politics there. And if the VC seems to be not supporting, this union? Nehao.
then now Nehao will come gun blazing against the VC. And if the VC now sees that she's getting an attack from Nehao, want to be a friend of Nehao, there's APSA. There's another union called APSA. Come blazing, just like that. So you will see that there's a lot of things happening there, and the only person who's taking bullets of all these things is the VC. Why? Because the VC leads the institution. We understand that. But it will be wrong of us if we are going to be harsh without putting these things, all of them, into test. Is really these things happening there, or what is actually happening? I will be happy if now we're going to be told, oh yeah, these people who are speaking these things as a case number, they've opened a case, now they've arrested who. There's nothing like that. It's all yeses. They can't even go and report it in a police station or anywhere legally. So, but they are out for a head of someone. So that is why you will all see this type of problems happening in the universities. It is because of these things of always outsourcing businesses in the institutions of higher learning. Let's do away with outsourcing. Now, because there's a crisis of accommodation in the university, now we go outside, we must get someone who must provide a building for us to accommodate our own students. And who's that person? Those who sit around the table, who plan these things and who are going to approve these things, they go and whisper to their friends, or they even bring their own buildings to be the ones that must accommodate what? The students. And they know that that is business. Transport also, it becomes a problem for those students who are staying outside. They must be transported to the institution. It's business. Security. Even to those buildings, there must be security. It's business. Security also, even in the university itself, is business. That is why I was happy when the EFF Students Command said, let's do away with outsourcing. We must insource. Let's have our own buildings as the university. Let's have our own transport as a university. Let's have our own securities as what? University. Then you will see a lot of these things are going to be minimized. But the moment we still focus on outsourcing everything, even outsource a person who must apply papers for us, then we're going to have problems. Even a person who must just give us a smaller thing in the institution to run the business of the university, we must run after people. We're going to have, I mean, that's why even also some of the SRC leaders, particularly presidents, when they leave universities, they are rich. They are rich. They are driving serious cars, they are owning farms, they are owning everything. Because what? They have managed to get someone and give that person a tender of a security to provide a security services to the university. Then after that, they say, hey, yes, your share. Go and be fine. And they know that they pay you once, but the security tender is for more than what? 5 years. So they can just give you whatever you go, then for example, as if when I entered as a president, I said, let's remove this security company. Let's now take the securities and insource them. Let the university be the one that pays the securities at the University of Vent. The owner at that time who was running that particular security company came to me. I remember, how much do you want? I told him, I don't want anything, but I want those securities there to be insourced by what? By the institution. Today, as we speak, securities are insourced at University of Vent. There's no company running a security services at University of Vent. It's the university itself running the security services of the university. That's what we must do to avoid all these type of things. So, as this is a matter of concern, Minister, my question is that, what are the systems in place from your office proper, particularly because you have seen these things are happening. You are seeing your VCs are being threatened. You are seeing your management and executive in the universities are being threatened. They want to be killed, and they will be killed. And some of them have been killed as we speak. What is that you are prepared to do to make sure that at least we deal particularly with this issue to minimize it? At least I've already provided one of the solutions to say, let's insource.
Thank you so much.
Then before I conclude, 2 minutes. Okay, one. Lastly, Minister, this is close to my heart. Young people go to university, they graduate for the good 4 years doing their degree and diploma, they graduate, and after graduating, these people are beneficiaries of NSFAS. After graduating, they go back, they must go and get employment. But before they get employment, they have been told that, especially educators in Mpumalanga, they have been told that we are prioritizing students who were funded by Funza Lushaka and Mpumalanga Basar. NSFAS students, you are the last what? Option. Then what do we have NSFAS then? When we are, when our poor people are going to apply for NSFAS, get education and qualify to be teachers, and when they go to work, they've been told that you are the last people who are going to consider. We must first place this one. I'm not saying we must not place Funza Lushaka and Mpumalanga Basari and the rest of other basaris. But don't give conditions. Because majority of educators in Mpumalanga are not employed. And posts in Mpumalanga have been sold today. People are sitting on positions, they are waiting for the highest bidder, I mean bidder, to buy the position, and then they give you a job. There's a group there of Mpumalanga unemployed educators. Those kids are crying. Those kids are crying because there's no one who's there to assist them. People are selling posts. So I want your office, maybe I can even suggest that next time, Minister, let's get a Department of Basic Education, and with your department, let's sit down around these things and look. We may say it's only Mpumalanga, but only to find that it's a national crisis. Let's sit down and let's look around these things and see how can we best assist our people, because we can't afford to have people go to school, spend good 4 years there, and come back and sit at home and nothing is happening. People are employing each other because of friendship, nepotism, what. Let's stop those things. We are here to represent people. Let's represent people. Let those who qualify get what they qualify for. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shikwamana Mamsivia.
Oh, I yes, Mamsivia.
Mamsivia
really is in that.
But you get heavy interest in Mamsivia.
Yes,
I'm not in here.
Chair, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining.
It's very difficult if the portfolio committee goes beyond the time we had agreed upon. I have a 1 o'clock meeting. I had requested I leave at 5 to 1. If you say, okay, I must stick to the original time, I'll leave here at 1 o'clock exactly. Because I've got other meetings. But now, if we are unable to finish our meeting on time, we're going to have difficulties, some of us. I have a meeting at 1, I have a meeting at 3, and I'm catching a flight at 5. So, I was going to request that if you want me to say something, I can say things briefly now and request to be released, because the time already is 10 to 1. And it's very difficult then to stay beyond this. I would really urge the portfolio committee to really try and stick to 9 to 1, which is how my program gets diarized and then other programs that have got to follow. We don't want to appear as if we are disrespectful. Not at all. Not disrespectful to the portfolio committee. So that's the difficulty I'm having now, Chair. Thank you.
Noted, Minister. There's Honorable Sibiya, Honorable Mananiso, and Honorable Chiba left. Some of the matters I know, DG, you can address. And DG, I know you understand Sibo said like I. But we also respect the fact that you do have other commitments. So I want to note from colleagues, if there's any matters that you directly want to pose to the Minister, Mam Sibiya, Honorable Mananiso, Honorable Chiro. and then you will respond to those that are that need to be captured by yourself. And then what's remaining, I'm sure DDG Fotwikwa and DG will be able to cover. Then we can release you. So I want to check with Mam Sibiya and then Honorable Mananiso and Honorable Chiu. Honorable Mananiso? Honorable Chira?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Uzumele Skalu Kepama Ikati, how long people talk, because this is now unfair, you know, on some of us, also as portfolio committee members. There's five distinctive questions that I want to ask the minister. Firstly, I want to find out why did the minister elect to appoint an independent assessor instead of acting on the recommendations of the entity report in relation to UNISA. Because from where we are sitting, it is also an act of fruitless expenditure that you can appoint experts, do the work, and thereafter shelve their report. And then appoint another team that makes similar findings. I just want to know what was the precise reason for doing this. Is it because the MDT report particularly focused on the previous administration before the current vice-chancellor and stuff like that? And second, both the MDT and the independent assessor report make serious findings about mission drift and over-enrollment. The North Gauteng High Court also made a ruling on this matter when the DA had attempted to force UNISA to deregulate students. The over-enrollment happened during Prof. Makanya's vice-chancellorship. I want to now know, isn't the investigation and finding late on that particular aspect, or should we hold the current vice-chancellor accountable for the maladministration of the previous leadership as well? And thirdly, the vice-chancellor's house flagged in the report section 4.4.2.2c mentions a report dated January 2021 flagging SCM deviations. And the current vice-chancellor only started in the same month, right, as what is mentioned above. Who was then responsible for the deviations? And can Parliament or this portfolio committee receive the report? Yeah, governance compliance around the clock hearing renovations. And four, I'm trying to go as fast as I can. Was there nothing positive found by the assessor in the Thai University of or UNISA's finance, research, enrollment, transformation, SDGs, etc., because the report doesn't point out those particular parts, and I think then there is a concern that this is the only picture that is painted for us. And, you know, the minister spoke about the maneuvering and rule breakers in the context of students, right, people going from one student to the next institution and being abandoned for pay. But I think this is the case even with people that are in management. And another an example of this in the case of UNISA is the registrar of UNISA. He left UT because of fraud and insubordination, but he was able to find space at UNISA. And in both institutions, he seems to be protected as well by these reports that come out from this institution. So I want the minister to look into that. If there's a response, that would be great. And I want to know, Minister, with Prof. Musia being appointed as the assessor of UP, I could be wrong, right? I'm questioning the issue of independence of somebody who's at the University of Pretoria, firstly. And secondly, there are governance issues at the University of Pretoria, but it's cited that there aren't governance issues at the University of Pretoria. And yet the same person is placed to investigate another institution, firstly. And secondly, was the Higher Education Act followed to the T in placing this man to be the assessor? I think there's other limitations that the Higher Education Act places on who the panel can be and those other things. The minister can clarify if I'm getting it wrong. But I'm interested in the limitations of what the higher education states and the placing of Musia to investigate UNISA. So there's other issues. I think I'll address them with the DG afterwards. I'm not sure if I should be leaving this here, but in the interest of time, it's fine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to members for your consideration. And I think the issue of time, I'm not going to tell people. Minister, I'm too young to have to ngilawula abantu abadala bangaka. So they must, we, including myself, must collectively introspect on how we go further with the engagement. I think it's really unnecessary pressure for me to have to stop people. So I think it must be a responsibility we take on, all of us. Over to you, Minister.
Thanks, Chair. I don't want to go over my line, cross a line, but I think it's important as the Chair that you should set a limit, honestly, going forward, that no one will speak for longer than such and such a time. Because it is a problem when, myself, I would like to stay longer and be able to engage and listen. So that would be my suggestion, but that's not my call. It's your call in terms of what you need to do. Let me just quickly start with the last questions from Honorable Chirwa. I did explain why I appointed an assessor. Because the ministerial task team that I had appointed was not going to, supposed to go to UNISA and investigate corruption and other things. I asked them to tell me about what's the appropriate business or operating model of UNISA. Is UNISA on a mission drift? You know, what are the implications, for instance, of taking young students increasingly who are coming out of school? Take them full-time and causing all sorts of problems. Not because we are saying those youngsters do not deserve to be taken into an institution. But if it is UNISA, and UNISA is not ready to handle them, by the way. It's a huge problem. The failure rate at UNISA is a problem. Now they come back to me, they did raise, which is, I hope, what the DG raised, what they actually raised. But then they recommend that I must put UNISA under administration. That was not their call. Only after an assessor, in terms of the law, is appointed and then makes that recommendation. Nobody else has got the capacity or the authority to make that recommendation. What would have happened? Let's say I accepted, put the university under administration via an indirect process, which was supposed to investigate something else. Now, we have not thrown away the report of the MTT on the operating model of UNISA. When I respond now, I will respond to both reports. I'm duty-bound to do that, including the report of the assessor. In short, that's what I want to say. The issue of over-enrollment was actually part of the problem. Because if you over-enroll as one institution, you are affecting the rest of the sector. That's what happens. And we agree on enrollment targets in terms of the capacity we have. We wish we had bigger capacity. We don't have bigger capacity than the one we have now. And UNISA was deliberately over-enrolling and causing mayhem in the system. We had to act against that. When I went to court, my going to court was not about preventing students from having access, was about sticking to enrollment targets as agreed. Because other institutions will complain. Why allow UNISA to over-enroll and some of us get punished? Because we punish for over-enrollment. It's not supposed to be the case. But it got twisted. Nzimande is opposed to access. Frankly, that was sheer political opportunism and not true. I wasn't challenging access. I was challenging not meeting the enrollment targets. Otherwise, you throw the system into problems. I'm still studying the report at the moment, and I've got a response from UNISA over the last weekend as to what do they say about positive developments at UNISA. I think the report does highlight some positive developments, but I can't speak with authority now until I have finished studying the report and the responses. No, I did say that this issue of problematic behavior does not only, in fact, I didn't even start with students. I started with management, people in management, who get fired in one institution then they get hired in the next institution. That we need a way to ensure that, and only secondly that I mentioned students, because it also does apply to students. So I agree with you that it's not only students who are actually. I appointed Professor Musia. I believe I was right, given his experience. We appoint people from the system who understand the system, generally. He's a DVC, and I appointed him in terms of the Higher Education Act. The officials may want to give a bit more detail after I had left in terms of the technicalities of that. He was chair of CAG also, by the way. You know? Someone who was chair of CHE has lots of experience and insight into the system. I don't see anything wrong about that. I'm sorry. I didn't appoint someone because I want to, for the person to actually do certain things. I trusted his own judgment. Now, just quickly, Chair, on the other issues. Well, I don't know. Maybe our Chief Director Legal can tell us. What's the status of a non-disclosure agreement legally? I know it's a common labor relations practice that people, if they agree to part ways, then they can enter into an agreement including non-disclosure. I don't know what that means. I can't go beyond that. We respect the internal labor relations processes of institutions. But generally, I want to say, by the way, if you want to call UCT to come and explain where they are as a portfolio committee, you're free to do so. The issue may be, when is the best time? Do you also wait like I'm waiting? I'm waiting for the investigation, the team that has been appointed to complete and then study the report. There are certain things that irritate one as you go along. As a minister, you must be careful. You don't just get irritated anyhow. But I might as well mention this because that's one thing I will ask. Why should a VC, a former DVC who resigned a year ago, be asked how did she leave? What's so special about her? Is that the issue of race? I just find that totally incomprehensible. The meeting gets held with the Senate, but the investigation is not going into the Senate. What is it that also happened in the Senate in the lead up to all the mess that we are seeing now? Those are some of my irritations, but I'm not wanting those irritations to make me prejudge the situation. I will look at the report, but you need to... Most of the questions you are asking about UCT, we can't answer them for UCT. We can only answer them from the standpoint of our interaction with UCT, what have we found, and so on. But the report, I will definitely look at it. I don't know, Honorable Khakha, why you ask this question. All my advisors have got professional relationships with all the stakeholders, including Professor Swartz. I know that because Professor Swartz is largely based in the Eastern Cape, he is in the Economic Advisory Council of the Premier, together with a group of other experts. And his participation is on the basis of his insights into higher education matters. That's all. So there is nothing funny. Chair, I don't want to speculate, and I'm not talking to Honorable Khakhao. But we must be very careful also as members of parliament that we don't get lobbied, you know, irregularly to begin to see things that are not there. I know for a fact that there are people who feel that I am using my advisor to make certain interventions at Fort Hare, since also he's a previous vice chancellor at Fort Hare. There is no such. I don't go dilly-dally on issues. I confront them. If there is a problem, I will go for it. I'm not going to use my advisor to try and get things through other means. I have got powers in law to instruct counsel and for counsel to answer certain questions. So when there are these things, then we must be careful we don't get lobbied. you know, to begin to present things that are not there. I'm just making this as a general point, Chair. Now, my office, I don't understand this thing that I took a long time to respond on appointment of SIU and so on. As a matter of fact, I wasn't there when Forte was put under administration. It was Minister Pando. Am I right? Not that I don't inherit that. I'll have to inherit what she did. I think she was correct to put the institution. I found when I was appointed the institution under administration. So there's nothing I delayed. We continued with the administration. I changed the administrator during the course of the administration because there were certain weaknesses and challenges that I was seeing there until administration was actually complete. And we have given counsel the instruction to look at the report of the assessor and deal with each and every aspect of the report of the assessor. That's what we've given the Vice Chancellor and the university now, including, by the way, the report of the administrator, sorry, not just the assessor. The administrator started dealing with the report of the assessor, but what the administrator was saying and found was doing, and Forte is supposed to report to us every twice a year. Oh, every 2 months my officials meet with the University of Forte. Because we do want these things. What I'm worried about also, Chair, I want to say this. The SIU Yatota is taking too long. The institution is burning. The SIU has been there for a very long time, but there's no report that I'm aware of that has actually come out. That in itself is becoming a source of instability. Because people are saying, when we went there, people were saying, we don't know what the SIU is doing there. We've never been briefed about what the SIU is doing. Now, it's taking too long. I raised this, by the way, with Mr. Mtibi of the SIU, that I am concerned that the SIU gets into an institution and stays forever. It's just not right. They do need to do their work quickly because this thing that is staying in there, there's no report coming out. All sorts of speculation and accusations are actually doing rounds. By the way, also, Chair, I think that this committee would help itself to also look at what is the proclamation saying that the SIU is investigating? Is that what it is investigating? And I think on our side, DG, we do need to go to the SIU to say, can you please, and even, we must have a time frame. Everything has a time frame. Because the longer it takes, all sorts of suspicions and naughty people begin to do things. I can't answer how Idioma was appointed, by the way. That's a Forte matter. Again, you can call for University of Forte. I intend to go to Forte. I've already written them a letter to say, I want to go back there and look at what are you doing about the situation as they had promised. And I will have to tell council that the VC has to be there because he's member of council. I know I ordinarily don't want to use my powers in law, but I've got powers in law to instruct council that I want the vice chancellor to be in the meeting, as he is a member of council. Now some people say, yeah, we are fighting the VC and so on. There are lots of challenges at Forte, including, by the way, the inability of Forte to spend money we've given them. Dr. Sokwigwa can tell you about that. We've given Forte money, including Smuso Bengu Development Grant. They are failing to spend that. So there are lots of challenges. I am going back there in order to assist Forte. The MUT situation is that Honorable Ngobo, as well as Umtian, Honorable Zondo, I have had people writing to me to say, we were punished, now there's new administrator, there's an administrator. I said, go to the administrator. Why are you writing to me? Minister doesn't deal with labor disputes. I have said, go to the administrator and raise your issue there. But some are like threatening minister, we are not doing anything, we have to instruct us that we are reinstated. I can't do that. The administrator is there to actually oversee that.
And then people have got to take the legal route if they actually want to do. Honorable Boshoff, I do agree with you. I like your idea of indigenous kind of solutions that institutions must find. That's what I'm saying, that most of the problems can be solved at institutional level. And what you are saying is that people must be creative in actually responding to those problems. Now, Honorable Letsie, you were talking about, yes, fees must fall. By the way, there was 800 million rands, over 800 million rands in 2016 damage to property. That is why it is important that we must have the do's and don'ts in case of protests, amongst other things. Let me end with this. The other matters, my officials will deal with them. I'm really now in trouble, Jay. Recognition of prior learning is a non-negotiable, and you can have no post-school education and training system without recognition of prior learning. We must not allow the investigation of corruption at Fort Hare to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I hope also the SIU, by the way, will get knowledgeable people to assist it when it comes to that, because SIU does not have that capacity. And that capacity rests with us. It rests with the CHE, and it rests with SACO. Those are the bodies who actually can speak authoritatively and finally. If the legislature in the Eastern Cape decided to have a program with Fort Hare, which includes recognition of prior learning, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's why even now we are developing an adult matric. Because an 18-year-old, a 45-year-old who writes matric can't write the same matric as an 18-year-old. That's part of our system. If your experience, you have been a trade union leader, you have been a member of parliament, is such that you had a junior degree, or you didn't have a junior degree, but when you are assessed for RPL, it's concluded that actually you are already NQF level 7, so you can do an honors. There's nothing wrong with that. Chair, I do worry when I hear in the media, even some of our journalists, by the way, saying, I don't understand, how can someone jump from a junior degree and do a master's without an honors? That's sheer ignorance, actually. We struggle for RPS. It's an international practice, RPS. It's not just, we struggle because under apartheid it was favoring whites. That's why Joe Slovo could come back from the army with a grade 9 and was allowed to go to VIT and do a law degree and did well, exceptionally well. It was for whites in South Africa, but there was also something which was called conditional matric, conditional exemption. If you are 23, then you can be, even if you didn't get those days what we used to call an M. So this thing of recognition of prior learning, I am watching the photo developments very closely, because I don't want people to start messing up as if RPL is corrupt. RPL is not corrupt. But if there have been corrupt practices, let them actually then deal with that, which I think is important. Chair, allow me then to... Honorable Shikwambana, I agree with most of what you are actually saying. Although I must say, not all council members are bad, by the way. I don't want that we should be left with this impression. They are very good council members, some of whom have been victims, because they've been opposing precisely what we are saying. Many of them are busy people, but who set aside their time to serve their country by participating in councils. So I don't want us to leave here and say council members are the problem. There are council members who are problems, but also they are excellent council members. With that, Chair, I want to say thank you very much, and I request to be released. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. We do trust that the DG and the DDG will be able to respond to the other matters. I'd like to propose to colleagues that we take a body break, and then we'll come back to Honorable Mananiso looking at me like I will not do that. I think colleagues know that I really respect the input that members always have to make. Maybe I'm too lenient in that respect. But I will go back to Honorable Sibiya, Honorable Mananiso, and Honorable Chirwa. Minister, before you leave, I think from what members have said, there's a general agreement from all of us on the importance of ensuring that the governance of the sector is intact. I think many of us actually even understand what could be at the root cause of governance currently. And it doesn't seem to be a clash of, are we teaching this subject or this subject? Are we using this this lens of education or that? It's really about people's business interests in our institutions. And so as we try and support the journey of teaching and learning by ensuring that there's access through transportation, through accommodation, ensuring that there's this wraparound system that South once spoke about of having food security, of having laptops, of having whatever study material that you need. So we as a sector are trying to invest in the PSET system to ensure that students are supported to successfully conclude their academic journey, yet people are seeing opportunities for business. And so that seems to really be what is plaguing our sector from a governance perspective, particularly the university program. I think with the TVET program, there's a bit of a different language. Of course, there are also, similarities, but the university program seems to really be challenged with that. And there's many suggestions that have come from members. I mean, others have spoken about outsourcing. There's been great support across, political parties for this governance branch you're considering. You've spoken about the early warning system. I think that was the response as well to some of these governance challenges that are plaguing the system, monitoring the hip-hoppers or the people who were recycling as a sector. Right, so those interventions that you're proposing, I think we are supporting them as a committee, and what will be important now is the implementation thereof. We are supporting that we must engage UCT directly at some point. We are supporting the fact that we must engage with Forte, and we're also glad that these reports have come to Parliament on time, CUT and UNISA, particularly with UNISA because it leaked immediately after it was sent to council. And, that really affects the integrity of the work that we're trying to do. So it being gazetted on time must be acknowledged. And what will really be important now is for us to not make hasty decisions. I think Honorable Shikwambana, Honorable Lucia spoke to this, to say we don't ideally want to be putting our institutions under administration. I think there's reports or that you've compiled on, the impact that assessors have had, the impact that administrators have had, and what lessons can be learned for us. We don't want to live in a sector where every 2 seconds you must be sending an assessor or sending an administrator. That's not what we want. So there is that caution or that consideration that members are encouraging for us to make or to take into consideration as we decide what needs to be done in the case of UNISA. And I think there's a big agreement as well on the politics at play and various interests at play and a concern around the protection of women who are, leading the sector. And, we're not even on 50-50 in terms of vice chancellors. We are 3-4, I think. But now Mam Khet is gone, that's going to go down. There's an attack on Pakeng. And we're not saying that women leadership must not be subjected to the same consequence management or discipline or whatever it may be, but we can't, living in a patriarchal society, we cannot be blind from the realities that women face in key positions like that. So those are some of the key conversations that have come up, Minister, and we trust in your office and your team to make sure that we look into this. And we commit our full support. The Portfolio Committee, Minister, we always say this. It's not a space where we come and ask DG and yourselves, why ning ayenzanga logo, why ning ayenzi logo. But it's really a space for us to also support the sector, and so these are suggestions that we have on how we can collectively strengthen the sector. So thank you, colleagues. We're going to take a body break and we'll be back at 1:30. By 2:00 I think we should be out of this room. Thank you.
Short time.